using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 8th of November, year of our Lord 2021, day 602 of America Held Hostage. Well, here we are, 602 days later. And as I've been saying, this all traces back to an executive order declaring a national state of emergency. And that is what this so-called mandate, of course, Biden says it's not a mandate. It's not a mandate. And the trillions of dollars that he spends with every bill, that's not inflationary. And it doesn't do anything to the deficit either. We'll be talking about that. Yeah, it's not the economy, stupid. It's the emergency, stupid. We'll be right back. Stay with us. That's right. It is the emergency. The emergency. The emergency is at the base of all of this. Now, there are some other challenges to this, and we'll talk about the basis for the temporary reprieve that was given on Saturday. But there is, and there's a great deal of ways to combat this. But ultimately, this is all predicated on their emergency powers. Everything that has happened for the last 602 days has been predicated on this national state of emergency. It's what allows them to run effectively a medical martial law. I said that from the beginning. As soon as that was done, Trump did it on a Friday the 13th, March 2020. And over the weekend, that weekend, you had both California and New York lock down their states. And so when I came back, I pointed out that this was the essence, and it wasn't an emergency at that point in time. We'd already had 2 weeks' worth of data from Italy. Oh, and by the way, Italy has now gone back and revised their COVID deaths down by, wait for it, 50%? No. 75%? No. 80? 97%. A little over that, actually. So we were lied to up one side and down the other. And it wasn't just that Trump was deceived by Fauci, because Trump was still selling that lie before the election, told us that he had saved 2 million people based on Fauci's model. He is still talking about how many people he saved. He's still talking about his wonderful vaccine. This was always an emergency, and the purpose of the emergency was always the vaccine. And so that's where we are today with OSHA. And so we have a federal appeals court on Saturday. As you've got, and it's going to be hitting a lot of different circuit courts across the country, because we've got 26 now is what I saw, but I had seen figures before, 27. I think it's 27. And one of these articles, they said 26. We've lost count, right? But it's more than half of the state attorneys general have filed a brief to challenge this. And the first one to come up was one that was done in Louisiana, the Fifth Circuit Court, based in New Orleans. And it is, as the press on the left is putting this out, they said, well, these are Trump-appointed justices. They may have gone to that one first because they thought they'd get a more sympathetic ruling. But we'll talk about the basis of this. What happened was you have a temporary stay, and the court there, the three-judge panel, has told the Biden administration that they will consider whether to issue an injunction against the vaccine and testing requirements. They said they want legal papers filed by late today, by 5 p.m. today. So we will not have that information until tomorrow at the earliest. The Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, tweeted out, said, "We won." Just this morning, citing grave statutory and constitutional issues, quote unquote, The Fifth Circuit stayed the mandate. The fight is not over, and I will never stop resisting this administration's unconstitutional overreach. Well, I'm good, because he never did anything to resist the unconstitutional overreach of a Republican president, Trump, who was at the very foundation of this. It's the executive order for a national state of emergency. It's the emergency, stupid. And the Republicans would do nothing about it. Finally, they're doing something. What did I say last year? I had bricks thrown at me by the audience because I said, I'm not voting for Trump, because if Trump is in, the Republicans will be silent. We will be put to sleep. We will have pacifiers put in our mouth. Those of us who worked for news organizations. Alex never could get that pacifier to fit in my mouth, however. That's why I'm here. Anyway, the bottom line is, it was never going to be opposed as long as it was Trump. He was a salesman. He was the one who was going to rush this thing through. Biden is an authoritarian. Well, we'll just leave it that way. Biden has always been this type of person. I knew what he was going to do. He hates natural rights. He hates the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. That's what he hated about Clarence Thomas, that he had the audacity to talk about the Bill of Rights and natural rights. So he knew what he was going to do. And this is the moment where he goes too far. And now it's up to us. Are we going to pull it back? He will try to go as far as he can, as fast as he can. And he's got more. He's doubling down on this, saying we're going to take this down to corporations that have fewer than 100. And at the same time, he's doubling down on his lies, saying, this is not a mandate. You thought it was a mandate, didn't you? Bloomberg, Washington Post, New York Post, all these people, New York Times, they all thought it was a mandate, but it's not a mandate. And, you know, trillions of dollars thrown away on infrastructure, and it's not on infrastructure. That part of it's a lie as well. This is not a bill about infrastructure. They do some things to destroy infrastructure, but this is fundamentally about a lot of payoffs to other people. And so it is not even an infrastructure bill. It's about everything else. And, of course, this is supposedly the good bill. The bad bill is coming. That's the one that the squad is cheering, that next bill. Is the one that's supposed to be filled with all the crazy stuff. I'll tell you what's in this bill coming up here. So to put in a bill that says it's an infrastructure bill, that's a lie. To say that trillions of dollars spent on each and every one of these bills doesn't do anything to the deficit, doesn't do anything to inflation, that's a lie. To say that this is not going to destroy the economy, that's a lie as well. Everything is a lie. And so the other lie is that this is not a mandate. They also tweeted out, Paxton also tweeted out, Biden's new vaccine mandate on private businesses is a breathtaking abuse of power. Well, that's true. And so was what happened last year. I'm glad they're finally opposing it. But again, understand these people will never do anything other than partisan opposition. And hopefully this will galvanize them to do something. But don't hold your breath that they're really going to give us a solution, because they're going to do just enough. These people are in bed with Big Pharma. They're in bed with the globalist, every single one of them, and don't expect them to defend your freedom. We'll take what we can get from them, but it is up to us at the local level to defend our freedom. Always has been, always will be. These people will not reinstate the Constitution. They're going to play around with it at the fringe. They're going to oppose each other, but this is professional wrestling at its finest. Anyway, the arguments that they're making. OSHA has only limited power and specific responsibilities. Yes, that's true. And I'm glad that they're opposing it here. Where was he when the CDC did a moratorium on evictions and foreclosures, for example? I mean, the CDC has only limited power and specific responsibilities. It's not even a legitimate government organization. It's private, like the Federal Reserve. It's a 501c. You can make donations to it. They can have patents. They can make profits off of the things that they do at the CDC. So how in the world do they give them a pass? How did they give them a pass through both the Trump administration and through the Biden administration? Even the Supreme Court, Kavanaugh, giving them a pass to continue the moratorium on evictions and foreclosures. Well, it was an emergency. How did we know it was an emergency? Well, Trump told us on March the 13th, 2020, even when we didn't have anybody dying. They didn't even claim they had any casualties there. They were basing it off of Italy. And we had 2 weeks' worth of Italy's data. And we saw that people who were, that they were saying died from COVID were average age of 80, average of 2.6 comorbidities. It was never an emergency. We never needed to have warp speed. A number of trade groups have issued warnings about the mandate. It is a mandate. Saying that it would exacerbate supply chain bottlenecks and staffing shortages nationwide. The White House remains confident that the mandate will stand up to legal challenges, said the White House Deputy Press Secretary, who, by the way, is there because Jen Psaki is not around because this double-vaxxed person caught COVID, she said, from another double-vaxxed family member. I should say vexed. They've been totally vexed. So they think that it's going to stand up to legal challenges. Deputy White House Press Secretary said, as for the legal side of this, let me be crystal clear. To avoid what appears to be possible misinformation or disinformation around the emergency temporary standard being a vaccine mandate. So if you say that it's a vaccine mandate, that's misinformation or deliberate misinformation, disinformation. Got to set that record straight here. Because what I say, what the White House says, that what they say is truth. And anybody that disagrees with them is misinformation or disinformation. Do not question what they have to say, even when it is something as obvious as the fact that this is a vaccine mandate. So she tries to play prevaricate around the bush by saying, well, we have a standard where you can do weekly testing and you don't have to be vaccinated. Well, that's a part of the lawsuit as well, and it should be, to call out that insanity. So Josh Hawley has now joined Senator Mike Braun, or Brown. I should have looked up how to say his name. He's a Republican out of Indiana. They have joined an effort to block Biden's private employer COVID vaccine mandate under the Congressional Review Act, which is a process for Congress to scrap an executive branch rule. Oh, they just discovered that? 602 days after all this stuff has gone on? I mean, look at all the rules we've had from the FDA, from the CDC, from every aspect of this coming from the executive branch under President Trump and the executive order that he put out there, the money that he helicoptered in to big pharmaceutical companies, to hospitals, to diagnose everybody as having COVID, to shut out other people who didn't pass the test and didn't get COVID and didn't get the cash. The money that he helicoptered in to governors to play along with them. Oh, now we're just looking at all of these. Now we're going to look at the Congressional Review Act. Well, I'm glad that they're finally doing it. Better late than never. But it just underscores, even when they do the right thing, it underscores how bad the Republicans are. And we're going to talk about how they had 13 of them cave on this infrastructure bill. It would not have passed otherwise. But the total silence across the board from all these, it's not like 13 defectors. Every single one of the Republicans in Washington, every single one. Talking about Rand Paul, talking about Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, you name it. Every single one of them and all of these, you know, people, Josh Hawley, Jim Jordan, all of them, they remained quiet while this type of thing was done. And now they're saying, well, the executive branch doesn't have this kind of authority. I hope they haven't helped to establish a precedent because it was Trump that's now going to be used by Biden. So this is what happens when you are hypocrites. This is what happens when you've got a political party that has absolutely zero integrity, none whatsoever. The Democrats win. You know, that's the one thing. The squad, as thoroughly dangerous and lunatic as they are, they tell you what they stand for, and they stand for it. They've got it. Do we have anybody like that on our side, on the side of liberty, on the side of freedom? No, we don't have anybody on our side that way. So they said in a November the 5th press release, they said this is an unconstitutional infringement on the fundamental rights of American citizens. It unlawfully bypasses established regulatory procedures. Well, that's right. After 602 days. We could say that Operation Warp Speed unlawfully bypassed established regulatory procedures by the FDA, and it happened because you had Mark Meadows, chief of staff for Trump, as well as Trump, threatening the head of the FDA, Hahn, at the time, saying, you get this done today or you're fired. And he got it done, and now he is working for Moderna. So they went on to say about Biden, he is ignoring the basic principle by forcing employers to require their workers to be vaccinated, undergoing rigorous testing procedures, or to be fired. It's wrong. And it will make our nation's economic challenges worse and must not be allowed to go into effect. Look, I complain about these people. Let's stand behind them. Let's encourage them when they do one right thing. It just bothers me that for 602 days they've done absolutely nothing, and I have a hard time looking past that. But never trust these people. Never trust them. Support them when they do the right thing. This is the right thing. Support them in coming after Biden. Better late than never. And if this is all they will do, we need to support them on this. But it fundamentally comes down to the emergency. Now, from a practical standpoint, I want to address this because there may be other people in this situation. This is a listener who sent this to me. I'm 29 years old from North Carolina. My wife has just received notice from her employer, which is actually based out of Dallas, Texas, that she will have to get her COVID shot. My wife is an RN, registered nurse, but she works from home processing Medicaid paperwork for her company. And because her name goes on a piece of paper, she has to be injected. Please help my wife. Please help. My wife is 33 weeks pregnant, and I want to have the best chances of getting her exempted. Now, I've replied to him, but I want to say this to everybody because I have a friend at church who's in the same situation. Worked remote, as I talked about, my friend church worked remote for 5 years. It's been 3 years since he's been in physical contact with him. I have another friend that way as well. Used to work in New Jersey, moved to Texas. He doesn't, and everything that he does is remote. So these guys are looking at this thing, and until this dropped on Friday or Thursday, they were being told by the corporations they needed to get the jab or they get or shown the door, and yet they're not even going into the office. Here's what is important, though. This thing is 490 pages long, but I talked about this briefly on Friday. For those, and I'm reading now from page 63. This is what the dictate from OSHA says. Employees who report to workplaces where there are no other people present face no grave danger from occupational exposure to COVID because such exposure requires the presence of other people. Well, these guys, they're all about the science, aren't they? Okay. These scientists, these are the experts at OSHA. Now, here's the key part. For those who work from their homes or from workplaces where no other people are present, such as a remote work site, the chances of being exposed to COVID through a work activity are negligible. Therefore, OSHA is exempting those workers who do not come into contact with others for work purposes from its grave danger finding, as well as from the scope of the ETS. In other words, for the moment, you're off. Now, they're going to keep working on this if we don't beat them back. But at the moment, if you work remotely, you don't have to get the jab. You have to take a test if you're going to come in contact with anybody. You've got to take a test before 72 hours before you meet with them, right? Now, again, that's one of the issues in the court challenge. They correctly brought that point up. They said, well, how does this protect anybody? Because if you have customers coming into the place or anybody from the outside, are they required to have a test 72 hours before that? Apparently, in this 490-page order, no. And so if you are a remote employee, you got to get a test 72 hours before you go, and then, of course, you're not going to get in contact with anybody in those 72 hours. But anybody else who's coming in doesn't have to do that. But again, I just want to underscore this, and I sent this back to them. Hopefully they got this. If your employer is leaning on you, page 63 of the 490-page order says this is not required for people who are working remotely, not required for people who are working remotely, not at this point in time. In a short ruling on Saturday freezing the mandate, the Fifth Circuit Court opined that the petitions made by states and businesses gave cause to believe that there is a grave statutory and constitutional issue with the mandate. This is why they're declaring a victory. This is not the court saying, well, this is a big deal, so we should just kind of hold off on this until we review it. They said, this looks like garbage. we're going to put a temporary stay, and I want another report. I got some questions here, and I want you to get back with me before 5 o'clock on Monday. So that's why they're saying we won. And, of course, though, that is just one court. So they say you've got to respond by 5 p.m. on Monday, November the 8th. That's today. OSHA said that the act that created them, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, explicitly gives OSHA, by the way, this is a Nixon thing, yet another thing we can lay at the doorstep of Richard Nixon. So when the Occupational Safety and Health Act that created this monster gave them the authority to act quickly in an emergency. Everything they say is predicated on the emergency. Again, it's an emergency, temporary standard, right? ETS. And I said on Friday, there is no emergency, obviously, because they took 2 months to do anything about this. And then they delayed it as they were deliberating on it. As they were putting all this stuff together, they said, nah, let's give everybody another month. Let's do it after the holidays. Because we had a lot of businesses come in and say it's going to impact our sales. It's not an emergency. They waited 2 months. Then they added an additional month, so they're not going to implement it for another 2 months. The only people that I've seen in the press getting this, and it is buried in the analysis of, Reason did an analysis of the court decision on Saturday. And they talked about some of the talking points. And this is a talking point that is in the lawsuit. It's one of many, but it's not even the one that most people in the press think is the fundamental thing. Everything is predicated on the emergency. Everything is predicated on this ETS from OSHA. Everything that has happened for the last 602 days is predicated on an emergency. And see, this is why I still say the Republicans are not focused on the issue. They do talk about the fact that this shows that there is no immediate need to do this. The fact that they've taken 2 months and they're going to delay it yet another month, so another 2 months out, so it's not an emergency. They talk about that amongst other things, but it is the fundamental issue because that is how we have suspended the rule of law everywhere, on every issue, whether it's mask mandates, whether it's the tyranny of the public health people. And again, I called it a medical dictatorship from the very beginning. And by the end of March, I was featured, along with some other people in the media, who were saying this is a medical dictatorship. And I was pilloried by Daily Beast. Who cares, right? I was a conspiracy theorist. I was paranoid. I was overreacting because I said this is medical martial law based on a declaration of a state of emergency. And until you get rid of this executive order by Trump, we will continue to live under medical martial law. That is the fundamental aspect. And there is no rule of law as long as this state of emergency is there. That's why I continue this day 602. I begin every show with it since that happened. So the one news organization that seemed to get it about 3 pages in, they said, although they stressed the emergency, this is LifeSite News, although they stressed the emergency, quote-unquote, situation, necessitating the OSHA mandate, the rule comes nearly 2 months after it was announced by Biden. And even if upheld by the courts, it will not take effect until the beginning of next year. But that's the only thing they say about it. It is the fundamental issue. It is the emergency, stupid. Remember we had James Carville, who said as Clinton was running, and he had all these scandals. He had scandals, financial issues with the cattle futures and dirty dealings by Hillary. He had the Monica Lewinsky stuff. He had perjury. He had been impeached and all this other kind of stuff. And James Carville just shrugged it off and he goes, it's the economy, stupid. And it was. Yeah, people, the economy was good. They voted him back in. They didn't care about any of that kind of stuff. Well, let me tell you, if you want to know what has turned our world upside down, it's the emergency, stupid. It's the emergency. The state of emergency. It released all the money. It has turned us into a lawless society ruled by dictators everywhere who say that the laws don't apply to them because they claim that it is an emergency. And this is just one more example of this. By the way, going back to when this all began, dark winter, why did I talk about that all the time? You had the simulation. It was just like Event 201. They did it on an annual basis. Event 201 was the final one. But the first one was dark winter. And it was done 2 months before 9/11. And then 1 week after 9/11, they had the anthrax attack. Very, very suspicious. I've talked about this multiple times with people investigating it again. Even mainstream media didn't buy it at the time and called it total nonsense, said the FBI was hiding who had really done it, that it was domestic and so forth. But they had that anthrax attack the next week, and then 2 months later, they had the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. That was to push this out to the state level. And you'll see when we talk about the basis of pushing back on this, that a big part of what they're saying, you can't do this because this has to be done at the state level. They knew that. That's why the response, they did the simulation, they did the attack, and then they did the legislation. And the legislation was all about pushing out model legislation that they wanted the states to enact because they knew the states would be doing this for them, the Democrat governors, the Republican governors. That was always the plan, and they rehearsed it for 20 years. But this is 9/11. This is the other shoe to drop from 9/11. It was right there at the beginning with 9/11, and they rehearsed it for 20 years. It is about the emergency. It's encouraging to see the Fifth Circuit Court stay the unconstitutional vaccine mandate, said Mike Lee of Utah. It's now time for President Biden to make the right choice and rescind the mandate altogether. Well, isn't that nice? I'm sure he'll do that, don't you think? Mike Lee has called on Biden to back down and to rescind his order. So I'm sure he'll comply. Just like, you know, Rand Paul says, well, I'm calling on you, Fauci, to resign. You should resign. Oh, I'm sure they will, don't you think? Who are these guys? Who is Rand Paul? Who is Mike Lee? They're senators. Why don't you come up with something to stop these people? I mean, you got Josh Hawley and Mike Brown have come up with this idea. Hey, we have the Congressional Review Act. There has got to be something that you could do about this to throw a monkey wrench in what their plans are. But you do nothing. You still done nothing. You just call these people. Well, this is bad. You should resign. You should pull this order back. Good job, Mike Lee. Good job, Rand Paul. You're really there on top of everything defending our freedom, aren't you? Once again, attorneys general are the true last line of defense, as one of them who was involved in this. Well, that's true. Except that they're not really the last line of defense. We are. Because quite frankly, if a last line of defense is lawsuits and the Supreme Court, we're doomed. The Supreme Court doesn't like the Constitution much better than Biden does. They don't like the Bill of Rights much better either. I mean, they've stood by the constant civil asset forfeiture. They've stood by TSA violating our privacy in order to fly. I mean, this is just the beginning of the legal battle over OSHA and the ETS vaccination mandate. Even if the Fifth Circuit panel ultimately rules against Biden, that won't necessarily be the end of the legal battle over this issue. It is possible that OSHA could respond to a narrow ruling against it by limiting the scope of the mandate or adjusting it in some other way. It's also possible that a lower court ruling against OSHA might be reversed or limited by the Supreme Court. In other words, the Supreme Court's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. If a panel of federal circuit court judges says the policy you are defending may have grave statutory and constitutional issues, which is what they said on Saturday when they pushed it back, this law professor who is laying this case out, he says, well, that's not a good sign for your case. If they put a stay on it and say this has grave statutory and constitutional issues. Ron DeSantis had this to say on Saturday as well. He said, we will stand up for the Constitution, and we will fight this unlawful edict, executive edict. And then he had something else to say, and I'll play, there's a couple of things that he plays, says in this clip I'm going to play for you.
Just be clear with what OSHA's doing. They're clearly not doing science, because they reject immunity through prior infection. They reject the Israel study and all the very strong studies that have come out that show people that have recovered from COVID have strong protection. They totally cast that aside, and they make no accommodation or acknowledgement of that in any way, shape, or form. But ultimately, people should be able to make these decisions. I don't think people want this decision yanked away from them. I don't think they want to allow a precedent where the federal government could come in and just force you to do what it wants you to do. And make no mistake about it, those individuals who have gone through a normal vaccination series for COVID, you will be determined to be unvaccinated very soon. They will do that. They are going to tell you you're unvaccinated and you have to get a booster. Otherwise, you could potentially face loss of employment or other types of penalties. So that is going to happen. They're not putting that in the rule, but they're already asking for feedback on how to do this going forward. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. It's going to get more restrictive. There's going to be more power brought to bear going forward if we don't stand up now.
That's absolutely right. And I pointed out last week that they were already sending out trial balloons about how they could extend this to every single business, about how they could extend the mask mandates even after people are vaccinated. And, of course, they've been going back and forth about what the definition of fully vaccinated means. And, of course, if they require boosters, that's going to change the definition. And this is not a theory. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is a criminal conspiracy. This has already been done in several European nations where they've gone in and changed the and in Israel, where they have changed the definition of fully vaccinated to go from 2 to 3 to 4, whatever. There is no end to it. Because, see, our government is now in the hands of the big pharmaceutical companies. And until these politicians have the integrity to confront that issue, until they have the integrity to confront the executive order that was done and now enforces now a bipartisan executive order, you see, as Trump and Biden, until they can bring themselves to criticize that executive order declaring a state of emergency, until they can stop bowing and genuflexing to big pharmaceutical. Well, now, I don't want anybody to be vaccinated out there, and I think it's bad for the kids to be vaccinated, but, you know, vaccines are great. Everybody should take your vaccine. Let me help you get a vaccine. I've got a place where I'll give it to you for free. I'll even give you an incentive. Today, you can get an incentive if you will roll up your sleeve. GOP-appointed judges freeze the Biden vaccine mandate requirement after a federal lawsuit. This is the tact taken by Bloomberg. As the Bloomberg News Organization puts it, they said, these are Republican judges in this Fifth Circuit. So the bottom line is that we have a politicized judiciary. We never know where these people are going to be on any given issue because they don't pay any attention to the Constitution anymore. As we've seen with their redefinition of marriage, they don't even have they should have recused themselves from cases like that. But they will define marriage. They will define when life begins. There is no end to what they want to do, and there is no prediction as to what they're going to do because they've already jettisoned the Constitution in order to make those kinds of statements about things. So, again, this is a friendly court that they got this from. There are going to be other courts that are going to be reviewing this, as well as ultimately the Supreme Court. The vaccine requirement is going to, and this is Bloomberg, right? Again, we're told by the White House that there is no vaccine mandate. So all through this article from Bloomberg, they talk about the vaccine requirement. They talk about how they're going to have companies of 100 or more employees to institute mandatory vaccinations for their staff. Biden on governor is fighting the coronavirus vaccine mandate. It's the subtitle of their video on this article. They say it's well within the Department of Labor's power to keep the workplace free of grave dangers in times of emergency. Again, emergency. But they say there is intense opposition from small but vocal factions of the country. that have organized against the pandemic measures, like masking, business restrictions, and, wait for it, mandatory vaccinations, says Bloomberg. But they're not mandatory, are they? Oh, yeah, they are. And not only that, but we have a small, tireless minority that will fight and will continue to fight. We are not going to give up. We're not going to give in. We're not going to roll up our sleeve to take a vaccine. We will roll up our sleeve to fight this. Because of the testing option the order gives employers, they said, they have this one paragraph in here as a disclaimer, even as they talk throughout the entire thing about it being a vaccine mandate. They say, well, in spite of this, it's not a true vaccine mandate. It's softer than what has been instituted by some private companies, and they give you an opt-out of, you know, being ostracized and tested forever. And nobody's talking about you paying for the tests now. I had one person, as I went with the figure that was put up by Reason Magazine for $150 per test, per weekly test. One person said, well, you get them for $35 on Amazon. It's like, well, you know what? The purpose of the weekly testing is doesn't have anything to do with protecting people from a pandemic. They point out that even with their inflated cases, that we have seen a plateauing or a decline in pretty much most places. There's a couple of overall. There's places where you've seen an increase, and that has been in the places that are highly vaccinated. You know, what does that tell you? But I'll tell you that when it comes to how much this test costs, I would go with a $150 figure rather than the $35 figure, because the purpose of this is to punish, not to identify somebody who is sick. Because first of all, as we've talked about from the very beginning of this, the PCR tests magnify things to an absurd level. We have 59 different PCR tests. They're looking for 59 different things. When the FDA put out its notice back in, I think, what was it, August of this year, saying they were going to have a new test that was going to be coming out at the end of this year, just in time for all this stuff, by the way. And you've got Bill Gates as a partner in this new testing thing. They're going to have a new test standard. And since Gates is going to be selling it, these other people are going to be selling it, I would expect it's going to be very expensive. $150 may be on the low end. And if you don't think that they will charge you more than that, have you been to the hospital lately? Do you see how much they charge you for an aspirin if you're in the hospital? Hey, you tell these people, wait a minute, I could get this on Amazon for less than a penny. And you're charging me $5, $6. I remember going back 40 plus years ago. We had some friends who, he worked for IBM, so he was completely covered with his insurance costs, but his wife had a baby, and he was absolutely outraged what they charged for diapers and all these other things. And he said, first of all, you never changed the diapers. You didn't even supply any diapers. And he said, look at this. You got an aspirin here for my wife, and it's $8. And we're talking about like 1980. And he was so angry about it that he went to IBM and to their personnel department. He said, this is a total ripoff. You shouldn't pay this. And the person at personnel said, you know, we have third-party insurance, and it just isn't worth it, and we'll just pay it. We don't care. See, that's why one of the reasons why medical costs have gone up so much, because of third-party payers. If you had a situation where you were responsible for the bill, and if it's coming out of like your medical savings account or something like that, but you had to pay it, and it was going to be some kind of connection to you and not to the big corporations, people would have pushed back on this type of abuse, and the kind of abuse has been there forever. Now they've put it on steroids with COVID. Oh, yeah, we got a positive test here. We magnified it by 1.1 trillion times, and now you show up as positive. So here, $13,000 for me. Oh, and I don't even have the test. I can do a clinical diagnosis. You told us you didn't have the test. You told us it didn't work, so do a clinical diagnosis. So when we look at this, and the cost of this, I will just repeat what I said last week. If we go with a figure of $150 per week, and again, remember, if they're going to come up with all new tests, the FDA said we got 59 different tests, and we can't compare them to each other because they're all testing for something different. Some of them are testing a partial mRNA sequence that we gave them. Some of them are testing a whole mRNA sequence that we gave them. Some of them are testing for a synthetic mRNA sequence. And that's, I'm quoting from the FDA. And so they've got 59 different tests, all testing for something different because they don't have an isolated virus. And as a result, they can't compare them to each other. But they're going to clear the decks, and they're going to have you tested for not just COVID. The new test is going to test you for COVID and for flu and a whole bunch of other things. So don't tell me it's going to be $35 available at Amazon. They wouldn't let you use that anyway. So as I said, going with a $150 approach, you're talking about $600 a month, and you're talking about if you want to do it on an hourly basis, assuming somebody is working four 40-hour weeks, you're talking about $3.75 per hour that your pay is docked. This is from the Democrats who are pushing for a rise in the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Now they're talking about cutting your pay to $3.75. Or, you know, you can take it down to the $35 total. It's still about a dollar an hour that they're going to cut from your wages. Is that good? Even if you were allowed to buy the super cheap one at Amazon? Okay, so Lawrence Gostin, a professor at Georgetown University, and we should listen to this because, you know, Georgetown University is where we grow our Supreme Court justices. They put them in the fertilizer there, and they sprinkle the liberal ideology on their heads, and then bingo, out comes somebody who is automatically suited for the Supreme Court. Most of them come out of that pile of manure we call Georgetown University, and Lawrence Gostin is a professor there. So he says, He's also director of the World Health Organization's Center on Global Health Law. So no bias at all in that, right? WHO's legal counsel. He said it's troubling that a federal appeals court would stop or delay a safety rule in a health crisis. He said no one has the right to go into a workplace unmasked, unvaccinated, untested. Oh, we don't? We don't? No, what you're saying is that's a privilege. What you're saying is that to go into a workspace is going to be a privilege. And he's going to make sure that you don't have that because he's working for the World Health Organization. He's working for this global health dictatorship. He went on to say, unelected judges that have no scientific experience shouldn't be second-guessing health and safety professionals at OSHA. Well, I would say that about unelected health professors who work for traitorous globalist organizations like the World Health Organization. I would say that Lawrence Gostin has no scientific experience. Lawrence Gostin should shut up. Most of these public health officials have no scientific background, no medical background. They have no medical ethics. And by the way, even if they were doctors, they're not my doctor, and they have no reason to issue a medical opinion. No one has the right to second guess my informed consent that I do as part of my sacrosanct doctor-patient relationship. Go away, Lawrence Gostin. Go collect your paycheck from these people that you've sold us out to. Go groom your Supreme Court justices. The very reason we have a second opinion, though, is because it's not just a doctor-patient relationship. I get opinions from a doctor. I don't take orders from doctors. So stop calling it public health. We just need to call it government health care mandates. That's what this is. This is what the fight over Obamacare was really about. It wasn't about the price of insurance. It was about who is going to make the calls over our health care, because that's what ultimately happens when the government takes it over. We knew it was going to be filled with mandates. It was going to be filled with things that you must do, just like it was filled with things that you must buy, like abortion coverage. That's why you had nuns and others who fought back against that, and by the way, won. So it's going to be filled with things that you must do, things that you cannot do, and we knew that we would have death panels. And that's what this is right now. OSHA has become a death panel. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll talk about some of the arguments behind this. We're also going to talk about the climate emissions and COP26. Biden had his own methane emissions standard that seemed to be different from the people around him at the event. But it is all part of the global takeover. Climate emergency is what they're telling people. Every time they say it's an emergency, they do this to sweep aside the law, to sweep aside all of the foundations of our society, selling it as an emergency. We'll be right back.
the common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Looking for better information? APSRadioNews.com features articles and commentary, along with audio from all the top news from around the world. APSRadioNews.com.
Oh, that's the hardest thing you've ever had to do. Saying goodbye to everybody, all the people that I've cared for so long, the people I've worked with. Because it's been so emotional. This is so unfair. I can't believe what the bloody government is doing to us. I just don't get it. They don't understand.
And that is from the UK. And we won't go through that. But it's heartbreaking to see this happening. This is just one person. This is a nurse who's been on call this entire time helping people. She knows what the risks are for the vaccine. She knows what the risks are for the so-called pandemic. And she's been fired. And you hear her crying there. Let's talk about the legal basis of this. Because even though, and I'm not going to get hyper-technical with this, but you need to know the general arguments about this. And one of the reasons you need to know this is because you need to hold your elected leaders' feet to the fire and say, look, you guys, almost every single one of you, are lawyers. What's the matter with you? Why aren't you doing anything? Why aren't you pushing back against this? All typically they're doing is just holding dog and pony shows because they're now media stars. The federal government has no general authority to protect public health, writes Reason Magazine, or to control communicable diseases, or to require vaccination, all of which are primarily state responsibilities. You see? If there's anything in you saying, wait a minute, you know, we're supposed to stop this. You know, we need to have government protect us from an epidemic. That is a state responsibility. We have federalism. Any specific things, anything that is not specifically given to the federal government cannot be assumed by them. They don't have that. They can't infer that. That's what the Ninth and Tenth Amendment is about. And it says, and by the way, if we haven't specifically delegated these powers to you, they're retained by the states and by the people, those powers. And so that is why, as I mentioned before, you have the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act. They put together legislation. They could have, after they did their simulation of dark winter and they did their attack, their anthrax attack the week after 9/11, they could have put together legislation and they could have done it at the federal level, but it wouldn't have worked. Because, you see, we still have the Constitution, and it was a bit too far for them to take the Constitution away that quickly. So what they did was they put together some model legislation and they shipped it out to the states. They know that as well. The Model State Emergency Health Powers Act is testimony to the fact that this is not a power that belongs to the federal government, first and foremost. So you need to understand that. But you need to also understand that it's based on the Emergency Temporary Standard, the ETS, which is what they're appealing to. The plaintiffs in this particular case represented by the Chicago-based Liberty Justice Center and Louisiana's Pelican Institute for Public Policy. They argue that the ETS exceeds the agency's authority under the OSHA Act. Even if it didn't, they say, empowering OSHA to issue such a sweeping order would exceed the federal government's power to regulate interstate commerce and to violate the non-delegational doctrine, which constrains lawmaking by executive agencies. And again, all of this would have, should have applied when the CDC put in its moratorium on evictions and foreclosures. And you could look at that and you could say, well, that sounds compassionate, except that the reality is 45% of the landlords in this country previously, it's not the case anymore, is it? Because what they did was they created a massive balloon note, putting them underwater with their mortgages and then letting the banks take it over. It wasn't compassionate at all. It was cold, calculated. The ETS option, which OSHA rarely uses, allows the agency to circumvent the usual rulemaking process, which typically takes years, just like it typically takes over a decade for the FDA to approve a drug. So we have to do, what do we do about that, they said. Remember when you had Fauci and the rest of them? You know, what do we do to get past that? I'll just play this for you again as a reminder.
You have to prove that this works, and then you've got to go through all of the clinical trials, phase ones, phase twos, phase three, and then show that this particular product is going to be good over a period of years. That alone, if it works perfectly, is going to take a decade.
Why don't we blow the system up? I mean, obviously we can't just turn off the spigot on the system we have and then say, hey, everyone in the world should get this new vaccine we haven't given to anyone yet.
And it's going to be very difficult to change that unless you do it from within and say, I don't care what your perception is, we're going to address the problem in a disruptive way and in an iterative way, because you do need.
Yeah, I don't care what the law is. I don't care what your perception is. I'm science. I'm Mr. Science. And we're going to do it from the inside, and we're going to do it disruptively, and we're going to do it iteratively, gradual steps. And so the Republicans should have pushed back when the FDA, which typically takes years to do it, did a disruptive and now iterative process, saying, well, it's an emergency, so we got emergency use authorization. Now we got an emergency for the kids, so we're going to authorize it for the kids. And there is no emergency. There's no emergency for the kids, and there's no emergency for this. Anyway, going back to this, they said they have to identify in these OSHA rules, if they're going to use the ETS, they have to identify a grave danger, quote unquote, to employees, quote, from exposure to substances or agents determined to be toxic or physically harmful or from new hazards. It also has to show the emergency standard is necessary to protect employees from such danger in 4 months. The ETS goes beyond OSHA's mission to protect occupational health and safety because it is not related to the workplace. The agency only has authority over workplace-related hazards. So there's one aspect of this. And again, this is Reason Magazine going through the court decision on Saturday. A good analysis. The ETS goes beyond OSHA's mission to protect occupational health and safety because it is not related to the workplace. Next part of it, the plaintiff's Fifth Circuit brief notes that OSHA has never attempted to implement a rule this broad. Although the agency has been mulling an infectious diseases regulatory framework covering airborne infectious diseases since 2010, it has repeatedly shelved the suggestion, leaving it to languish on the agency's no action agenda, unquote. That's from the plaintiffs who prevailed on this. The only previous OSHA standard dealing with vaccination was much narrower, and it required, listen to this, quote, employers whose workers could be exposed to blood or to other potentially infectious materials at work can offer free hepatitis B vaccination to employees. They would offer it. It wasn't a required vaccination. Why? Because you should have a decision whether or not you want to take a vaccine for hepatitis B or if you want to try to address this some other way. But again, that was clearly, it was very narrow. It was a workplace hazard. People who were employees and they were working with blood, and they said, well, if that's the case, you need to offer this for free. but not force it. Even that standard did not require vaccination, and it did not deal with the general population. It dealt very specifically with people who were handling blood in the workplace. More specifically, the plaintiffs argue that COVID-19 is not a toxic substance or agent. That's what they're supposed to be regulating. So they're supposed to be regulating those types of things in the workplace. This is broad everywhere. OSHA cannot attempt to shoehorn this disease into the phrase new hazards. That phrase, say the plaintiffs in this lawsuit, said should be understood in the context to exclude airborne viruses, because Congress explicitly allowed for an ETS to be issued for substances or agents determined to be toxic or physically harmful. The catch-all phrase to encompass other hazards must be read in light of and limited to items that are similar to those that come before it. Otherwise, the brief says, OSHA would have unbridled power to promulgate any regulation that would have the arguable effect of preventing the spread of communicable disease. Such measures could include a shutdown of an entire industry, such as meatpacking, that might harbor a high incidence of COVID-19, even if it was just incidental. It could include a nationwide shutdown of all employers engaged in interstate commerce. It could include a nationwide mask mandate on all customers visiting OSHA-regulated businesses, or even a rule mandating an appropriate regimen of vitamins aimed to boost your immune responses. Well, that's simply fantasy. The pharmaceutical companies are in control of this, and they don't like vitamins. They don't like people doing anything natural, and they don't have enough of a political presence there to make something like that happen. But that's the only one of these that is a hypothetical that could not happen. The rest of these things are very serious, so we should pay attention to that. And we should understand the dangerous situation that we're in when we have established a medical dictatorship where every law is off the books and every agency is competing with every other agency to see how far and how fast they can expand their power base. That's where we are right now. We're now 602 days into this, and we've got agencies out there that are eager to increase their little fiefdom. It's all about headcount for these people, and it's all about the impact that they can have on people's lives. And, of course, if they've got a big impact, if they can carve out a big section, then you're going to have lobbyists coming to these guys. Yeah, and they're in the money at that point in time, right? I mean, we stop and think about OSHA and what they have done this last year. OSHA had very – we've talked about this with the mask mandates in the workplace. They had very clear mandates about masks. If you worked in a very dusty environment, and if you worked in a dusty environment, if you were doing something, a sawmill or something like that, these N95 masks that people are wearing are very effective for large particles like that. They're absolutely ineffective for small viral particles. They become saturated with moisture after 20 minutes, and they become useless even for the spittle particles that are going to carry the virus. So they're not useful for this purpose, but these N95 masks were very useful for work in a dusty environment, and they required it. OSHA did require that. However, at the same time, they also required that you would not have to wear those things for more than 20 minutes because of danger to your threat, to your health, the health threat of depriving yourself of oxygen, of increasing your carbon dioxide. You need to give employees, if you've got a dusty area like that, they must wear masks. But after 20 minutes, you got to give them a break and let them breathe some fresh air. Is that happening with any of the employees who are working fast food or retail places? Not the places that I see. They're being forced to wear masks. Anyway, otherwise, the brief says that OSHA would have unbridled power, and that's what they're looking for. The Supreme Court has cautioned against assuming that Congress is intended to authorize executive actions with broad economic implications if it did not explicitly say so. So here we are again. The Supreme Court, as recently as 2014, said, you don't have this authority if it's not explicitly given to you, which is basically kind of a 10th Amendment version of the regulatory agencies. So just as the federal government, according to the 9th and 10th Amendment, cannot infer powers or grab broad new powers, only do what is explicitly given to them, in the same way the Supreme Court said in 2014 that this new legislature, you know, where we get most of our rules. And again, the rules are worse than laws. You might think if you violate a rule of the government and they come after you and they start hitting you with massive fines and so forth, you might think, well, that's the government coming after me. I should have some due process. Well, they have a little prevarication that they use saying, well, this is not a law by your elected representatives. This is a rule by unelected bureaucrats. Therefore, you have no presumption of innocence. You have no due process and you have no trial. And no protection against excessive fines and punishments. We can do whatever we wish. We can fine you $14,000. We can fine you $140,000. So there is, however, a principle that was supported by the Supreme Court in 2014. Quote, when an agency claims to discover in a long extant statute an unheralded power to regulate a significant portion of the American economy, said the Supreme Court in 2014, we typically greet the announcement with a measure of skepticism. In other words, if we've got a law that's been there forever, and now they've discovered a new power, we should view that with skepticism. In the same way that we should review the Supreme Court's decision, Roe v. Wade, with skepticism. There was no right to kill your kid behind the right to privacy. And the same Supreme Court has not protected our privacy in any way, shape, or form when it actually comes to privacy. They've not supported our right to choose our medical care. We've already had the Supreme Court make that decision with some people who were appealing these vaccine mandates. They do not stand behind their privacy or behind their choice. And these are people like Barrett, who supposedly was a Christian. Coming into this. So we can say the same thing about the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has looked the other way. So again, we don't really know exactly what they're going to do. But in 2014, they said, we typically greet this with a measure of skepticism if they've discovered a new power or a new right or something. Like the Supreme Court is the only ones that can do that. We expect Congress to speak clearly if it wishes to assign to an agency decisions of vast economic and political significance, said the Supreme Court back in 2014. Well, they didn't speak clearly. As a matter of fact, they didn't give this power at all to OSHA. It was Biden who gave it to them. And this has less to do with health, has nothing to do with an emergency, has nothing to do with health. What this has to do with is a requirement that everyone be vaccinated or you be purged out of society. It's just that simple. I hope everybody can see that now. Certainly the people who listen to this program, I think, understand that. But I'll continue to hammer it in case we have new listeners. The extended time frame for the ETS undermines, and here's a key, they finally get to this emergency. It's the emergency, stupid. Here is what the plaintiffs said where they attacked the emergency status, the ETS. The extended time frame for the ETS undermines any claim of exigence. In other words, a need for immediate assistance. It's not an emergency. There's no need for immediate assistance. There is no exigence. And the real kicker is the same day that the ETS was released, November the 4th, the White House announced that it was delaying a federal contractor vaccination mandate from December the 8th to January the 4th, again, undermining its assertion of exigency. The plaintiffs suggest that, quote, truly grave dangers do not wait to spread until after the holidays. It is merely a iterative step of convenience. It's an iterative step to mandating vaccines everywhere. And that's what I'm truly talking about, not just for the workplace, but everywhere, to live in society. And if we do not stop this, folks, where this is headed, and we can see this already happening in Austria and other places, where this is headed in Australia as well as Austria, we can... See, these people are basically in Austria. They're going to lock people out if they get a certain number of ICU beds, percentage of ICU beds occupied. In Australia, they're building the FEMA camps for people right now. They don't call them FEMA camps, but this is what we've always known was going to happen with this. And they're saying that you're not going to have a part in the vaccine economy. As a matter of fact, you're filthy, dirty, you're diseased. We're going to isolate you. We're going to quarantine you for life if you don't get vaccinated. Once you get vaccinated, somehow at that point in time, even though it does nothing to about spreading of the disease, now you are perfectly safe to be around us. That's what this is about. And if we do not win this fight, we will have, and I'm not going to predict a time frame for it, but we will have a date coming up in the next year, maybe two, where we are going to be fighting for our lives to stay out of prisons. Massive internment camps. That's what they're after. They're already laying the foundation for this in multiple places and bragging about it in Australia. So, again, the extended time frame shows this is absolute nonsense. The brief then argues that the new ETS is under-inclusive. Under-inclusive. In other words, it's not broad enough because weekly testing could miss people who are carrying it. Because the employees who are vaccinated can still carry the virus, but they don't have to be tested or wear masks because the rule does not apply to customers or to other visitors who could transmit it in the workplace. Even when we look at OSHA's rule saying, all right, the one that I mentioned earlier, if you're a remote worker, you don't have to get the vaccine. But if you're going to go to the office, you got to get tested 72 hours prior to that. Why 72 hours? Why not a week? I mean, we're doing weekly testing. Which is it? Is it 72 hours? Is it a week? It's nonsense. The whole thing is a lie. The whole thing is inconsistent. There is no scientific or medical consistency to any of this. 72 hours or a week? What is it? Make up your mind. Which lie is it going to? It's a problem with liars. They just can't keep their story straight. They can't remember what they said in one place and be consistent about it somewhere else. But again, everything about this is an emergency. Everything is about an emergency. And it's got to be done right now, at warp speed, right? We got a special offer. Today only. You know, you can get your bonus or you can get your vaccine lottery or your free donuts or whatever. But today only. Got to do it now. Well, I gave you the offer. Now I'm going to have to compel you to do it. That's the only difference. But this is a classic scam. Catch it if you can, right? Visitors who rule, visitors who may transmit COVID-19 in the workplace at the same time do not have to get a weekly test or a 72-hour test. So they point out this is under-inclusive. Then they say it is over-inclusive at the same time. Why? Because, quote, it does not account for vulnerability related to age or pre-existing health conditions. And because it does not accept naturally acquired immunity as a valid reason to forego vaccination. And because while the ETS excuses remote and outdoor workers from its scope, hear that? Remote and outdoor workers, you're not under this. It covers every other employee while acknowledging that employees in different roles face vastly different risk levels. So in other words, you're going to ignore natural immunity, it's over-inclusive. If you're going to ignore pre-existing health conditions, it's over-inclusive. We do not want medicine and medical prescriptions and doctor's orders coming from OSHA, folks. It's just that simple. Not from the federal government. This is the absolute worst case of one size fits all. And that's everything that the government does is always one size fits all. That's the problem with government schools. One size fits all. Then they want to make it common core. They want one size to fit all coming from the federal government, not even from different states, not even from regional school boards. No, it's going to be one size fits all, and we will determine what's going to be in that. So going on, the ETS applies to every workplace of an employer of 100 or more employees. But it does not consider the different degrees of risk associated with differing workplaces. See, because it's politics, it's not medicine. It's politics, it's not science. It's tyranny, it's not law. Even if Congress wanted to give OSHA the authority that it claims, the plaintiffs say doing so would run afoul of the non-delegation doctrine, which aims to preserve the separation of powers by requiring an intelligible principle, quote-unquote, to guide regulation by executive agencies. OSHA's newfound, this is also in the plaintiff's brief here, they did a good job, frankly. OSHA's newfound authority empowers it not simply to set safe levels of potential carcinogens in the workplace or to require safety equipment and employee training, but to regulate the off-site medical decisions of employees completely disconnected from work. If OSHA can require that companies mandate vaccines, What can it not require? He had a business, and he had to deal with ever-increasing federal regulation. It was a manufacturing, small manufacturing business where they made some private label stuff and some stuff that was on contract, and it would be things like perfume and stuff like that. And because it had alcohol in it, they got under the auspices of the BATF. And they wound up, and then we're talking about back in the 1960s, having to keep $30,000 worth of money, you know, when they would get a bunch of supplies, they would have to pay them that much in taxes because of the heavy taxes on alcohol. And then when they would prove to them that it had been used to make perfume and not something you could drink, they would get that back, but then they had to get another batch. And so it just stayed there interest-free. And this was a time when there was not a big spread between what you could make in the bank depositing money versus what they would charge you. Now it's ludicrous. Now they charge you well beyond loan shark rates. You know, they can typical credit card, 15 to 20% or whatever. They jack that up in certain cases. While they pay you less than 1%, far less than 1%. But in those days, that was a significant thing that you couldn't put it in an interest-bearing account even. It was in a non-interest thing. So he'd constantly be telling me about stuff like that. And you know, when he would talk, he would say, you know, these people in the federal government, they just want to shut down the world. If he could see this today, he would first of all be amused at just how literally true this was. But then he would also be outraged, and rightfully so. And we should all be outraged at what this has become. These people have truly shut down any type of business like that for small, medium-sized people. I did not go into it because I could see the handwriting on the wall. And and now they're shutting down, as we saw last year, the last avenue for the middle class, for entrepreneurs, and that is service businesses. They're not essential, and we're going to shut you down. And we're going to shut down small restaurants because now we have to make sure that nobody gets in the public space unless they have the mandate and satisfy the mandate, because the objective is to have everybody vaccinated. That in and of itself is such a red flag. It's just like the fact that they have legal immunity from damage that they did to anybody. You look at that, and you look at their obsession with getting everybody vaccinated. But the legal immunity was the one that did it for me years ago. But now when you look at their obsession to get everybody vaccinated, it is simply satanic. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second here. The Congress itself, in this brief, Congress itself does not have the authority to demand that private sector employees choose between vaccination and testing plus masking. According to the Supreme Court's understanding of the Commerce Clause, a federal government can regulate activities, quote, having a substantial relation to interstate commerce, unquote, even though those activities do not cross state lines. By the way, even though the Supreme Court says that, and they did that with FDR's basis, you know, saying that, we're going to control activity even within a state because we're going to assume that even though you're not shipping things across, you're affecting the broader market. That's wrong. That's wrong. We should not allow those types of things to establish that. But this doesn't even that kind of broad reading and misreading of the Commerce Clause does not even apply here. In deciding whether a given regulation meets the test, courts are supposed to consider, quote, the economic character of the intrastate activity, and whether the regulation contains a, quote, jurisdictional element, unquote, that may establish whether the enactment is in pursuance of Congress's regulation of interstate commerce. It does none of this. In this case, a regulated activity, the decision to forego vaccination, is not only not economic, it's not even an activity. So what they're doing is they're trying to regulate you not getting a vaccine and saying that this has to do with the Commerce Clause. Well, only in to the extent that the big pharmaceutical companies are engaged in commerce. They had their vaccines paid for by Trump, delivered by Trump. They pay for out of these profits that are protected. They buy the media. They've bought the governments. And they want you to engage in that commerce because you're nothing more than cattle to them. So, in this case, a regulated activity, foregoing a vaccination, is not economic and it's not an activity. The plaintiffs argue that foregoing vaccination is analogous to refraining from purchasing government-approved medical insurance. See, we go back to Obamacare. And the Republicans never put the stake in the heart of that thing. So the plaintiff said, well, the Commerce Clause, if that's the way you're going to read the Commerce Clause, then it can mandate that employees require their workers to attend the gym weekly or to eat broccoli, which is a reference back to the hypothetical case in Obamacare when they said, you can't force us to buy insurance. That'd be like forcing us to eat broccoli or go to the gym every week. And so then, after John Roberts wrote that opinion, saying, we're not going to force it, can't force it. Then he writes the other opinion and switches his vote at the last minute after I think he was blackmailed and said, no, we're going to call it a tax. And then when the Republicans got rid of the tax penalty and then went hat in hand to the Supreme Court saying, please, you know, remove this, or actually to the other court system, they went to lower court. Circuit court judge says, yeah, well, if it's a tax and you remove the tax, then it's gone. And so the Obama administration, Eric Holder, said, well, it's separate from this. No, it was the basis for you being able to do this, according to John Roberts, was the tax. But they argued that it was separate, and they appealed that decision. And all through the 4 years of the Trump administration, his attorneys general, first Jeff Sessions and then William Barr, continued that appeal. All they had to do was just drop the appeal. And Obamacare would have gone. See, if they had dropped the appeal, they'd already won in the lower court. If they dropped the appeal, it would have been gone. The Republicans never wanted Obamacare to go away. None of them, including Trump. So here we are. We've established this. This is your government health care that you wanted. This is the mandates. This is the death penalties. This is the rationing of the hospitals in the name of protecting us from a pandemic. They go on to say, nor did OSHA or Congress make any findings regarding the effect of COVID-19 vaccinations or testing on how that would impact interstate commerce. So the agency's avowed aim is to protect unvaccinated employees from risk posed by their own choice to remain unvaccinated. If those choices can be said to affect interstate commerce, the plaintiffs say, it is only by piling inferences upon inferences because they've done nothing to say this is going to affect interstate commerce. They haven't made the case for that. They haven't done a study for that. There is no basis, legal or medical, for any of this. The vaccine mandate, however, is going to, because there's 26 different attorneys general and state attorneys general, it's not just the Fifth Circuit of Court, which is the first one to happen on Saturday, but it's also going to go before the Sixth, the 8th, and the 11th, and then it will go before the Supreme Court, no doubt about it. So the Surgeon General was on the Talking Head shows over the weekend, Vivek Murthy, and he said, well, look, the president, the administration wouldn't have put these requirements in place if they didn't think that they were appropriate and necessary, and the administration is prepared to defend them. We're geared up for a legal fight. He also told ABC that companies and governments, quote, take every measure possible to make our workplaces safer for the safety of employees and customers of businesses. Quote, it's good for people's health. It's good for the economy. And that's why these requirements make so much sense. I didn't elect him. I don't know if anybody even elected Biden. I don't think so. But the bottom line is he doesn't have the authority to tell me what is good for health. And he certainly doesn't know what's good for the economy. If he's going to try to portray a situation where you're going to fire 5%, 10% more, 15% of the people, and you're going to do it across the board, you've got police departments, fire stations shutting down. Only about 52% of the fire engines are available for use in New York City. Now, how is that good for the economy? How is any of this good for the economy? We have rolling shortages of everything rolling through our economy here. And all it takes is one widget that you can't supply. And I'll give you a personal story. Happened over the weekend. My daughter was driving, and there was a truck in front of her, driving her car. And a truck in front of her had just laid a bunch of sheetrock on the flatbed, and they hadn't tied it down, evidently. And so one of them flew off, picked up, got picked up by the wind and flew off and hit her car. Could have seriously injured her. I mean, it crushed the front of the car. I was absolutely surprised what a sheetrock could do. And it shattered the windshield on the passenger side, put glass all over her and all over the car, but just completely shattered it, banged up the fender, banged up the hood, the whole bit. And so we contact the insurance company to get this taken care of, and we have rental car coverage. And so we go to get a rental car with the company they deal with, and which is Enterprise, and they didn't have any cars. We get there, and it's like we go to sign up for this. Oh, they didn't tell you we don't have any cars until next week sometime. Well, do you have any other places? Yeah, we got bigger places, but of course they have more people that are going there for car rentals. So we called several Enterprise places all around the area, and the soonest we could get one would be the Wednesday after the Saturday this happened. some of them are 2 or 3 weeks out. So you can't get rental cars. And they said, and we can't buy rental cars. We can't buy more cars because, you know, this is why you're seeing used cars going up in price so much. They can't finish the new cars because they're waiting for this final widget to complete the car, and they can't get that from wherever they need to get it. So not many new cars are being manufactured. The car rental companies can't get it. And then the other aspect of this is that people who are, and so they're just basically renting cars to people who've had accidents, you know, to their insurance companies. And they said that people are taking a lot longer to return these cars because the people who are repairing the cars can't get the parts to repair the car. So you can't buy more cars because we're missing something. And you can't finish the car repair because we're missing something. And what we're missing is the rule of law. And what we're missing is any appreciation or understanding of how Biden is deliberately trying to burn this economy down. In recent weeks, numerous trade associations across the United States have sent letters to the Biden administration warned about possible worker shortages or supply chain bottlenecks. Are you talking about possible? This is, this is zero hedge. I'm sorry. Possible? Possible? It's been here for a while. It's just getting worse. And it's going to get a lot worse once they do this. The U.S. is already facing unprecedented supply chain disruptions, says the American Trucking Association, and delays due to many factors, including significant labor shortages, production shutdowns, a shortage of raw materials, and pent-up consumer demand as well. So, you know, you're going to fire truck drivers, which I say they've already got too few of. When you have a truck that breaks down, they have the same problem as a car that breaks down. You can't get the parts. The Biden administration is weighing expanding this again to all companies, not just 100-plus employees, all companies. All of them. And as I pointed out last week, I said, you know, it's really strange when you look at these fines, right? There's one that is, they say, well, it's nearly $14,000 is the way it's typically reported in the media. And they have another one that goes up to nearly $140,000. But when you look at the numbers that are there, they're really strange. At the fine if, per employee, if you don't, if they don't get vaccinated, is $13,653. And then if they decide on their own, and again, this will be decided without a presumption of innocence, this will be decided without a jury trial, without due process. And if they decide that you have been willful, they will do $136,000 and change, and it's an odd number there as well. And of course, you know, you don't have any protection against excessive fines either. Now, I had a listener, when I talked about that, I said, where in the world did they come up with this? Did they price this in euros or something? and then do a translation? Where did you get $13,653 as a fine? That's insane. Why don't you make it $13,000? Why don't you make it $14,000? Why $13,653? And the listener says, well, I just noticed something. If you add up those numbers, 1 plus 3 plus 6 plus 5 plus 3, you get 18. In the same way, if you add 666 together, you get 18. Hope I'm wrong, but I don't know. It seems to be the core of everything they do. Here's wisdom. Well, whoever has understanding, count the number of the beast. It's the number of a man, and the number is 666. So whatever, for what that's worth. When you look at having something where you have to buy and sell, you have to have this thing from the government. You have to have this mark from the government, the mark of the government beast, their permission to buy and sell, where it's worldwide. That's already in there as far as I'm concerned. I like the headline from WND. Biden is basically playing a monumental game of chicken. That's exactly what he's doing. Now, we see from the Associated Press, and it was on the Drudge Report, this article, vaccine refusals in the intelligence agencies raise GOP concerns. Well, you know, who knows? How do you know that this is the case, right? The GOP is saying, well, you know, we're concerned that we're going to be firing people at an intelligence agency who don't get the vaccine. Well, the CIA is bragging that they've got 97% have been vaccinated. There's 18 intelligence agencies with about 100,000 people, according to Representative Chris Stewart, Republican of Utah, who's making this statement. Well, did he notice that we don't even know? We're not allowed to know who these people are, how many of them there are, what their black budget is. How in the world can you believe the CIA when they say 97% of their people have gotten the vaccine? How are you going to verify that? We don't even know who these people are. And you're going to presume that we know their vaccination status? Or you're going to presume that the CIA director, William Burns, would tell you anything other than a bold-faced lie? So they're playing back and forth with this, and the mainstream media picks up that statement by the Republican, and they use it to say, no, you know, the intelligence agencies are really jumping into this big time. Well, for whatever it's worth, which is nothing. We don't know anything about that. But this interchange was a little bit more interesting. This is an interchange between Richard Burr. He is the, he's come into a lot of publicity lately. We'll want to go into that right now, but he is head of the committee, the top Republican on the panel, I should say. He's not head of it, but he is a top Republican on a committee that is essentially reviewing the CDC. And he was asking Walensky, director of the CDC, what percentage of CDC employees are vaccinated? Actually, that was a question by Bill Cassidy, another Republican. She said, we're actively encouraging vaccination of all of our employees, and we're doing outreach in order to get our agency vaccinated. Is that a response? I said, what percentage are vaccinated? So then Richard Burr, after Bill Cassidy asked that question and got no answer, he says, do you really not know the answer to the number of vaccinated individuals at the CDC? Or did you just not want to answer Senator Cassidy's question? She said, well, we're still actively working on collecting the data, and those data are updated in real time, she said. Now, stop right there. For the last 602 days, we've been running an emergency pandemic based on numbers that are being updated and published all the time about everybody in the world, especially in the United States, who's got COVID and who doesn't, who's vaccinated, who isn't vaccinated. And we're supposed to believe that the CDC doesn't know about their employees. They know about everybody else in the world, but not about their employees. See, I think when it comes to the vaccines, I think what this all boils down to is that the CDC has a don't ask, don't tell policy when it comes to the warp speed genetic injections. She said, we're so actively working on it. We're collecting the data. And so then he said, Well, I'd like to have it by Monday, November the 8th. That's today. He said, we're working towards updating that data. And I would have to speak with my staff about where we are and whether those numbers are going to be available on Monday. Who are you? You're nothing but a senator elected by the people. I'm really in charge here. I'm the CDC. I'm a quasi-governmental private organization operating at for profit. And I don't know if I can tell you next week, you know, meaning today, I don't know if I can tell you how many of our employees have been vaccinated. We might be able to get that. Maybe we won't. Burr then followed up and he says, if the collection is still in process, how are you going to start disciplinary actions based upon this executive order? Because, you know, it's not, now we're talking about the executive order from Biden saying that all federal employees are going to be fired. But then again, that begs a question. Are the CDC people federal employees or are they private? He says, she replies and says, well, we are actively updating those data. And I just don't know exactly when it'll be fully in, but certainly we will have those data by the appropriate deadline. So we'll have the data by deadline that's appropriate, not by your deadline, Senator. And you notice that she didn't say that they're going to take any disciplinary action because maybe that mandate for federal employees doesn't apply to the private CDC. And so then he asked, and he says, well, if the CDC doesn't have to live by the rules, why should employers have to live by the mandate rules? And that's exactly the point. See, the rulers are the people who make the rules, not the people who follow the rules. They make the rules for you to follow. And these pathetic politicians pretend not to know. Unvaccinated troops, by the way, are being threatened with losing all their veteran benefits, as I've pointed out many times. This was from the very beginning of all this. Navy, Marines have clarified that members who refuse the mandate will be relieved of duty and separated from the service after Tuesday's deadline. At least 8,500 active duty members of the Air Force and Space Force are still in noncompliance and risk now being kicked out. However, there's no indication yet that commanders have booted anybody at this point. The Department of Defense, taking its threat of punitive actions a step further, said that unvaccinated service members could see their veterans' benefits taken away, and this would be determined on a case-by-case basis by the base's local commander, whether or not they would get a less-than-honorable discharge. They've had Republicans have offered bills to try to make sure that they would not get anything less than an honorable discharge. That has been rebuffed by the Democrat majority. But at least some of those senators tried. The Pentagon is saying they're holding this out now. This is the stick. No more carrots. No more money. No more lotteries. No more donuts. It's just like, you do this, or we're going to kick you out. We're going to take your pension. We're going to even take away the medical care at the VA for you. Absolutely reprehensible. They're faced with losing everything from education benefits, such as the GI Bill, to eligibility for a veteran's home loan, as well as medical care. In Colorado, the Democrat governor there has signed an executive order to turn away the unvaccinated from hospitals, not just turning away the vets from the VA. But the rest of us, if they follow in line with these Democrats, Jared Polis in Colorado, he's got an executive order to turn you away from medical care if you're not vaccinated, just in general, right? If you're unvaccinated, a regular trip to the grocery store, a night out to the dinner are more dangerous than they have been at any point during this pandemic. See how they lie? The cases have plateaued or declined severely. The best case that the Associated Press, a propaganda organization, if ever there was one, the Associated Press is just like Pravda and Izvestia. Pravda meaning truth, Izvestia meaning news in Russia. The people said there is no truth in Pravda, there is no news in Izvestia, and let me say that the Associated Press is associated with Izvestia and Pravda. And yet even they said that the best case they could make, when I talked about this last week, they said, well, the declines have lessened the rate of decline. It's still declining, but it's not declining as quickly as it has in the past. Therefore, it's still an emergency, and we got to do all this. And you've got the governor of Colorado saying that even though they've got an 80% partial vaccination rate, that they are going to push people away from getting medical care. Pursuant to the authority vested in the governor of the state of Colorado, he goes, there's an order for hospitals and freestanding emergency departments to transfer or to cease admission of patients to respond to the current disaster emergency due to coronavirus disease. And it is going to be discriminating against people who are not vaccinated. In Austria, as I pointed out earlier, they have come up with their intensive care unit number. They said, well, you know, we have 2,000 ICU beds, and if we get 25% of those occupied, we're going to lock the unvaccinated in their homes. Well, the reality is we know from The Lancet, we know from World Health Organization, we know from the CDC that transmission makes absolutely no difference. Your vaccination status makes absolutely no difference in terms of you transmitting the disease. And so we're just assuming that any of this stuff works. We're just assuming that it's not the vaccination itself, which is the pandemic right now. But their own pronouncements are saying, we've got a virus and we've got a vaccine, and the vaccine doesn't make any difference with the transmission of the virus. That's what they say. Nevertheless, as I had a listener in Europe point out, they had 2,500 beds, ICU beds in Austria, and 500 of them just disappeared in the middle of this so-called pandemic. They removed 20% of them. And now they're saying that if the remaining ones, the remaining 80%, if they get more than 25% of those beds filled up, they're going to lock away the unvaccinated in Austria. In Boston, there was a rally over the weekend, protesters against the vaccine mandates. And there were counter-protesters. This is an organization, a demonstration, a protest that they called Rise Against Tyranny. They said they were organizing against vaccine passports, face diapers, mass layoffs, and unconstitutional mandates. The counter-protesters were from left-wing groups and Antifa, Green Monster Antifa, organized a counter-protest. And they showed up with to fight people. They showed up with noisemakers and speakers to shut this down. You know what Antifa really stands for, right? It's not anti-fascist. It's anti-FA. I've said this many times. First Amendment. They don't want you speaking. They're anti-First Amendment. They are Marxists. So you had people who were anti-mandate, is the way they're described in this article. Actually, they're pro-liberty. It's the same way we talk about people being anti-abortion. Are they anti-abortion or are they pro-life? Are we anti-mandate or are we pro-liberty? Are we anti-vaccine or are we pro-liberty? Well, we are pro-life and we're pro-liberty, and that's why we oppose both of those things. And as I said before, New York City, the fire truck availability is down to 55%. I think I said 52%, but it's down to 55%. So, again, the Neros are just waiting for somebody to light a match and to burn the city down. We had this seemed to get most of the attention over the weekend. Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers and the criticism that he is getting from people who are paid by big pharmaceutical industries, people like Terry Bradshaw, who is nothing but a big pharma organization, Fox News. Yeah, he's pushing this. He's not a quarterback. And he's criticizing Aaron Rodgers. What Aaron Rodgers said was, he said, I realize I'm in the crosshairs of the woke mob right now. So before the final nail gets out in my cancel culture casket, I'd like to set the record straight on so many of the blatant lies out there. He said that he feels great. He tested positive for COVID, and what everybody is upset about is the fact that he said, well, I've taken care of my immunity or whatever. I've taken steps with it, or I've got immunization, I think is what he had to say. And everybody kind of backed off and said, oh, well, you know, I guess that means he's vaccinated. And I don't have a problem with what he had to say. I don't have a problem with what he did. It's really none of their business. It's not Terry Bradshaw's business. It's not any of these other sportscasters working for these news organizations that are funded by big pharmaceutical companies. It's not any of their business. And quite frankly, we know what their business is. It's selling vaccines and pharmaceutical products. So anyway, he says he feels great. He's in great shape. He says, if the vaccine is so great, why are there so many vaccinated people getting sick? And if it's so safe, why do the manufacturers need legal immunity? See, that's it. That's the red flag right there. He said, everyone on the squad knew I was not vaccinated. Everyone in the organization knew I was not vaccinated. He said, health should not be political. That's exactly right. It was such a witch hunt. They wanted to out and to shame every single person that didn't get vaccinated. And that's the other red flag. I'm glad that he pointed out the fact that, hey, why did they need to have legal immunity? He could have gone further and he could have pointed out that they were shaking down entire countries, Argentina, Brazil, and a third Latin American country. Then we found out the heavily redacted data that came out of Europe had it leaked out, and we can see that they are desperate to have legal immunity for all kinds of things. They honestly don't believe in their product, and they believe that they have criminal liability for fraud. You can see that in their demands. Why would we be taking this stuff? He says, has anyone actually talked about real health? This is a professional quarterback, professional athlete. Has anybody talked about real health, about exercise, about drinking water, about eating real food? No. I'm making a decision based on what's best for me and for my own health. And for me, it's a no-brainer. And he also quoted Martin Luther King, who said, you have a moral obligation to object to an unjust rule. That's absolutely true. So they point out that he's been attacked by Mike Florio of NBC Sports, who called him a liar. I don't know who that is. I don't watch sports. But again, you know, he works for NBC. They sell vaccines. And then I think the most reprehensible thing, that again, it's all based on the fact that he had a press conference. Somebody asked him about his vaccination status, which was really none of their business. He said he was immunized. Now he's saying he was taking homeopathic therapy during the offseason. He felt offered the same protection as being vaccinated. That's what it's reported in the media. He says now that he tested positive, he's taking ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, he's taking monoclonal antibodies. Stay away from that stuff. They didn't mention zinc. He needs to be taking that. That's the purpose of taking ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Those are ionophores. They help your body to absorb the zinc, but it's the zinc that's the key thing. And you can also, if you can't get ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, quercetin will also work as an ionophore to help your body with the uptake of zinc. He claims his symptoms were mild and that he already feels much better after the initial positive test. And so you have Terry Bradshaw taking him on. And the way the leftist mediaite.com reports it, Fox Sports, Terry Bradshaw destroys, all uppercase, destroys Aaron Rodgers for lying about vax status. Quote, learn how to be honest, unquote. Well, he doesn't belong to Fox News. Fox News belongs to Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson and these other proven criminals. That's who he works for. He's not a quarterback. He doesn't play sports anymore. Terry Bradshaw has become a big pharmaceutical whore. That's what he is. And he says, I give Aaron Rodgers some advice, he said. It would have been nice if he'd come to the Naval Academy and learned how to be honest. Let me ask Terry Bradshaw. Hey, Terry, did you ever criticize Pompeo, who went to the military academy at West Point? And he said, when we were at West Point, I've played that many times. So when we were in West Point, we were told we don't lie, cheat, and steal. We don't tolerate people who do. So I went to the CIA, and we got classes on how to lie, cheat, and steal. And he laughed about it. And his conservative audience at Texas A&M laughed about it. I guess it would have been too much for him to talk about how they have classes on how to assassinate people. And if he had talked about the fact that the people that they're deceiving are the American public, telling us things like weapons of mass destruction, they got those lies by torturing somebody to get them to say those lies. And he wants to hold these people up as a standard of integrity? Well, you know, if I can find a place where Terry Bradshaw called out Mike Pompeo or called out Gina Haspel or called out Trump for lying to people about things that are our business, it's nobody's business whether another football player has taken a vaccine. And then to show you that Terry Bradshaw has absolutely no credibility himself and no integrity, this big pharma shill, this big pharma whore says, well, he's taking ivermectin. That's cattle dewormer. Sorry, folks, but that's what it is. Sorry, folks, but what Terry Bradshaw is a lying shill. He'll say anything to sell these vaccines to you. And like these other people, Terry Bradshaw's got blood on his hands. It's people like Terry Bradshaw doing this for money that is why these people are sniffing around our children at this moment. He says, unfortunately, we got players who think only about themselves. And unfortunately, we got a lot of people in the news media who only think about their next paycheck. They don't think about what they're doing to their fellow man. They don't think about what they're doing to the society, what kind of society they're going to live in. They don't think about the fact that we got toxic genetic injections that are going to be forced into kids, that we're going to have our entire society ripped out from underneath us because of people like Terry Bradshaw, who sell the big lie. So anyway, he says, Rogers went on to say about the immunization thing. So at the time, my plan was to say that I have been immunized. It wasn't some sort of ruse or lie. It was the truth. If there'd been a follow-up statement asking, I said, I would have said, look, I'm not one of those anti-vax flat earthers. What does that have to do with anything? Why is it that people are so obsessed about the flat earth? What difference does the shape of the earth one way or the other have to do with any of the pressing issues that are facing us? I mean, I've said many times, I don't believe that the earth is flat. I don't believe it because of spherical trig and many other things. I know that people lie to you about everything, but I don't believe the earth is flat. But what difference does it make? All it does is serve to discredit people. And again, oh yeah, you're an anti-vaxxer, flat earther. Well, I am anti-vax. I'm anti-vax and I've been anti-vax for the longest time because I realized Aaron Rodgers, while he was calling signals and running around on the field, I was looking at what was happening with the vaccine scams that were being run by the CDC and Fauci for years. And I was looking at the fact that they have absolutely no liability for their products. And the same, and now he's awake to that as well and asking, why don't they have any liability for this? Well, we've moved on from that, but that's why I was an anti-vaxxer for everything. If you don't have any product liability, then I'm not taking your product. If you don't believe in your product, don't expect me to believe in your product. It's just that simple. If you have no confidence in it, if you're scrambling around blackmailing countries to protect you against fraud and criminal negligence, not just the rushed design of your genetic code injection, don't expect me to do that. And why would you associate somebody who objects to that as being irrational? Which is what he's trying to imply with a flat earther. He said, I'm somebody who is a critical thinker. You guys know me. I march to the beat of my own drum. I believe strongly in both autonomy and the ability to make one's own decisions. At Newsmax, it's been reported. Newsmax is now denied. We'll wait and see what happens. But it was reported that Newsmax would be implementing a vaccine mandate because they have more than 100 employees. And so then you had one of their hosts, Steve Cortez, says he will not comply with any attempt to enforce Biden's workplace mandate. Subsequent to this, now they have come out and said, no, we're not doing that. So he said, welcome to the I'm fully vaxxed compliant folks out there. No, you're not. Welcome to the Fauci Pfizer shot of the month club. That's how he responded to people. Of course, he, you know, somebody who worked for Trump, he will never tie Trump to this horrible thing that he pressured through. This horrible thing that he told the FDI, forget all your rules. You're going to approve this now. He will never call it the Fauci Trump Kool-Aid, which is what it is. That is a cult. That is a cult. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, let's talk a little bit about headline news on this Monday, 8th of November, year of our Lord, 2021. As I mentioned earlier, the House passed a $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. We were told all through the beginning of the Trump administration, he was talking about doing a $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Oh, we couldn't do that. And actually, his infrastructure bill actually did address infrastructure in a constructive way. This only addresses infrastructure in a destructive way. And they wanted this passed so they could then move on to fight over the really, really woke Marxist bill that is coming up. But the Democrats had the help of Republicans in passing this. The squad set it out. So you had the six of them voted against the bill, but we had 13 GOP lawmakers across party lines. And so the final vote was 228 to 206. Now, if you had put those 13 GOP on the other side, it would have lost. It would have lost 215 to 221. So that was, let's think about this. For reasons of their own, because it wasn't radical enough, the squad voted against it. But you had 13 GOP lawmakers who voted for it. And when I tell you what is in this bill, you will see what a betrayal that is. First of all, the Zero Hedge puts it, from 10,000 feet, it looks like this is about refurbishing aging roads and bridges and ports and replacing lead pipes and upgrading and hardening the nation's power grid and on, right? But the reality is that's not the case. When you get closer, the devil is in the details. And so here are some of the details that these devils have put in there to help pay for the roughly $550 billion in new spending. More than $200 billion in unused coronavirus relief funds will be repurposed. So, you know, that money that was going to help people, that was all a lie. It's like Portal, right? The cake is a lie. Yeah, Trump, you're not essential. So shut down and shut up. And oh, by the way, I'll give you a little bit of money here. It's not really going to cover all your expenses. We'll call it the Payroll Protection Plan, PPP. and we'll give you a little bit of money, but you got to spend all that money, pretty much 75% of that you got to spend on your payroll, keeping people there. In terms of other things that are happening, well, you know, there's not going to be much of that left over. But in reality, you had some people who were getting, you had one individual who got a dollar for her business. And, of course, the banks, when they were brokering this stuff, they were getting paid fees based on the amount that was put out there. So they don't want to process a loan for somebody that's going to be a dollar and they get, you know, whatever, 5%, 10% or whatever that is, probably not 10%. But they don't want to, you know, get a nickel or a penny for putting together that loan. And so they were going to their big customers. And, of course, Trump changed the rules, Trump and Mnuchin, changed the rules on that. So they redefined what a small business was from somebody who had fewer than 500 employees to somebody who had fewer than 500 people at a given location. That way, the Trump hotels and the big businesses and the big chains could still get their money. And you wound up spending virtually all of it, the vast majority of it, went to fewer than 5% of the companies, and they went to companies that were not small. And now what is left is being repurposed by the Biden administration to help to pay for his agenda. We'll talk about what that is. So $50 billion from a Trump-era rule on Medicare rebates, another $50 billion from various states, unused unemployment insurance supplemental funds. So again, they're stealing back the money that they promised that they would give you, but actually they gave it to the big businesses, what they did put out. The rest of it they kind of held in a fund, and now they're taking that back to help pay for this. Where will the rest of it come from? Tax hikes, IRS colonoscopy—they're going to do a colonoscopy. That's a sometimes get hung up on some of these words. Colonoscopy. How's that going to look? Well, they're going to be doing IRS colonoscopies. 80,000 new agents. Remember, a lot of people were saying, well, how is OSHA going to enforce this? They've only got about 1,800 inspectors. Well, they said, we're going to rely on snitches. So when somebody snitches on somebody, then, you know, we'll give them a colonoscopy. And so the IRS, in terms of the agents that they're going to have to stick on you, just with the new ones, not counting what they've currently got, but just with the new agents to do this, that's going to be 160 times the number of total agents that OSHA has. That's going to be just the new IRS agents. That's part of this bill as well. So then we look at some of the other things in there. There's it does include the cryptocurrency tax reporting requirements because, you know, they want to get money from people. So they've got some new stuff in there. Roads and bridges. There'll be $110 billion of that. But remember, I've reported before that they've earmarked some bridges and detours as being racist because they go around communities to protect them from excess traffic and people going through there, as well as to facilitate people being able to use their cars and not have to sit in traffic and not have to sit in traffic lights. It's not a good thing for the people driving the cars or the people living in the neighborhood to have the cars running through them. But those bypasses are now racist. And so they're going to tear down those racist bypasses. See, we've got a lot of deconstruction that's involved in this. And it's not just tearing down bridges and bypasses. It's also putting in speed bumps, narrowing the roads and putting in bicycle lanes and pedestrian lanes and things. They call that road calming and road diets. So there's going to be a lot of that. They're going to be deconstructing the ability of people to use cars. Public transit, however, is a big win. Billions of dollars, $39 billion to modernize systems and rail and train tracks. Amtrak itself will get $66 billion. Electric cars, buses, and ferries, that's another $7.5 billion. And it's going to be used for zero-emission buses. $5 billion for them just for that, zero-emission buses, including thousands of electric school buses. You know, the kids can get on the school buses and they can wear their little masks and it'll be electric. And then we'll have more of the buses around here in Austin, which are always empty when I look at them. I mean, I'm not just talking about last year. They were always empty as they were talking about having automated buses. I said, well, if you do that, if you have self-driving buses, you'll have these buses driving around with not a single person in them, because usually that's the only person in the bus is a person driving the bus, and they'll have nobody in the bus. We could just run these things constantly. So electric cars, buses, and ferries will be getting a lot of money. There'll be broadband internet because, you know, we need to set up the surveillance structure of 5G and also the medical issues involved in that. And I'll get back to that in a moment here. Well, let me just touch on it real quickly. I talked about that on Friday when we were having transmission issues with Gerald. We had a drop-off and some other things that happened. And so when we came back, I started talking about what we're trying to reestablish connection with him. I said, you notice that they have now announced in the U.S. that there's a very, very broad range of frequencies that 5G is involved in, very, very broad. And so they're saying one part of this frequency spectrum that they've already auctioned off, they said, we're concerned that this is going to interfere with air traffic control, said the FAA. We haven't tested this. Testing? Who does testing on anything anymore? Do we do health testing on 5G? Do we do testing to see whether it's going to interfere with planes or not? No, we don't worry about that. We don't worry about the vaccines, about 5G, none of that stuff. That's so old school to do testing before you roll something out. And so I said when I was looking at it, I said, first of all, that's the thing that jumps out at me, the fact that now the FAA is saying, I think that's going to possibly interfere with planes, and we need to do some testing of that because no testing was done. But, of course, nobody is looking out for our health. They haven't done any biological testing about this. And, you know, you got to do it disruptively, do it from the inside, do it iteratively. That's what this is all about. But I also said, you know, we've operated with these prohibitions on aircraft for a very long time, and a large part of this, I always suspected, who knows why, they had these rules saying you got to put your phone in airplane mode. I mean, we even got a function for that, right? Which, by the way, I never did. And I always did it as an experiment. Well, not as an experiment. I knew that this was not interfering with it. Just think about this. Whether you know what the frequencies are or not, whether you know that the frequencies are totally different that they're operating on, just consider this from a logical standpoint. If my cell phone, my particular cell phone, was going to disrupt the operations of the plane, they would never be able to get off the ground. They would never be able to taxi. I mean, you know, they're telling you, well, you know, put your phones in airplane mode now. We're getting ready to take off. And it's like, we're still on the ground, and there is a flood of cell phone towers here on the ground, and there is a flood of people who are using their phones in the airport and all this kind of stuff. You're going to make them shut down the cell phone towers? You're going to tell everybody to shut down their phones so you can take your plane off, have the plane take off? Seriously? you would never, if it interfered with it, you'd never be able to get off the ground. And I thought, why in the world are they doing this? And since I am a conspiracy theorist, I thought, well, you know, we had that ridiculous statement about Ken Olson's wife, who he was able to get rid of somehow or the other on 9/11. She was supposedly in the plane in Washington that supposedly flew in the Pentagon, even though there's not a single picture of it anywhere. This is a building that is just covered with video cameras. Nothing was ever shown of that flying. Don't you think that'd be so visceral? And they could use that to drum up public support to go anywhere, to fight anybody over this. Don't you think they would have used that if they had that footage? Don't you think they would have let that show up? They even ran around confiscating camera footage from nearby businesses, convenience stores, and things like that. And, of course, what we saw was that there was a hole in the wall that wasn't big enough for the engines and the wings to have gone through there. And there weren't any parts initially on the ground there, but the big parts, like the engines, that would have been left behind. But you had this narrative that Ken Olson's wife, Ken Olson was the lawyer who helped shepherd through the hanging Chad fiasco there in Florida, the 2000 election. And we were told that his wife was on that plane and she was frantically talking to him on the phone. And so I not only would not put my phone in airplane mode, but I would also try to call people as we were just taking off and things like that. And just to validate for myself decades later that that's not possible. It's not possible. That's why they had the phones on the planes that would use a different means to communicate with people, satellite phones or whatever. I think it was a satellite phone. I'm not sure. But, you know, if you wanted to make a phone call, you had to use those special phones. You couldn't just, call Ken up on your cell phone. Just another one of these things about 9/11. But anyway, getting back to the infrastructure bill, so we can have phones that we can that we can call while we're flying around, assuming we can still fly, which we won't be able to because I'm not getting a vaccine. If you look at some of the other stuff that's involved in this, right? So that's the kind of stuff that from a distance, it looks like, oh, yeah, they're kind of doing an infrastructure, although I don't like their policies on infrastructure because they're going to create a spy network, 5G, that is going to have who knows what kind of health issues with us. They're going to be deconstructing things. They're going to be funneling a lot of money into Amtrak and other forms of transportation people don't like, while they're going to be denying us what we choose to do, which is individual private cars. Everything in this is set up to make it more difficult to drive cars of any type, but especially private cars. So here's some of the other things that are in there. The Republicans just helped, and this is a bunch of tweets from Oilfield Rando. And he said, Republicans just helped Democrats pass $500 million for tree equity. Oh, yeah, we got some more tree news coming up here in a second. Republicans just helped Democrats get $500 million, $500 million for transportation resilience and adaptation centers of excellence. What do you think that is? Who knows? I guess we'll have to pass it to find out what it is that's in there. He says, after $70 billion in COVID relief, Republicans just helped Democrats give universities another $400 million. $400 million in the transportation issues. This one, Republicans just gave Democrats $1.4 billion for protection grants, another climate change initiative. Republicans just forced states to provide an annual list of disadvantaged businesses owned by women and minorities, verified by in-person inspections. So, this is the first step to reparations. Understand that. Republicans just gave Joe Manchin's wife $1.1 billion. She gets more. She gets almost three times as much as all the universities in terms of this ripoff. Yeah, he was playing that all along, wasn't he? I guess we should start spelling his name Mansion. That's the way my transcription always spells it anyway. My transcription always says Joe Manchin, as in a big house. And so I think that's probably going to be true. His wife got $1.1 billion for the Appalachian Regional Energy Hub Initiative. There you go. Ah, see, it's all about the environment, so it's all good. Republicans just gave Democrats $75 million for a study on how to enact income-based road usage fees. They want toll roads everywhere. They want tax by mile everywhere. They want to limit your driving. And furthermore, they got criticized for this, they said, well, we will only charge toll fees for people who are making more than $400,000. And if you believe that, I'll build a bridge for you there in Brooklyn. Republicans just gave the D.C. Metropolitan Area Transit Authority $750 million. They gave $2.1 billion to North Dakota's carbon dioxide pipelines. Pipelines. And he finishes up the tweets by saying, well, here's another one here. Brandon Build Back China Bill just includes $5 billion for zero emissions and low emission buses. This is a lobbyist that was hired by a Chinese electric vehicle maker to manufacture electric buses, $5 billion. And they're lobbying them very hard. This company, which is moved to the front of the lobbyists here is a company that the CEO, Wang Chuanfu, is a member of the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress and was selected into the United Front Work Department. They are involved in overseas espionage and influence peddling. That's a part of the CCP that is involved in that. So anyway, promotion of electric vehicles and many other things. And finally, Oilfield Rando says, Republicans just passed all of this excrement. And that's true. That's true. 13 of them. And, you know, even, well, the squad didn't vote for it because it wasn't radical enough. But that was, even though Nancy Pelosi said, well, step two, we're going to help to promote, you know, join in with us. Step number two, we're going to do this. Wouldn't it be nice if we had Republicans who were actually as committed to their political beliefs and their agenda as the squad is? Yeah, they're absolutely wrong. It's reprehensible what they're doing, but we don't have anybody in the Republican Party that really cares about what they're saying. And I mean nobody, because they would have done something before 602 days. And they're still not doing much of anything. Microsoft has been mocked, and I had the clip to play here, but I don't know. Do we have that clip? I didn't get that in the deck here. But Microsoft introduced a conference, and it's absolutely disgusting where they had, I'm Nick Fillingham, and I'm a Caucasian man with glasses and a beard, and I go by he and him, and I'm a security evangelist here at Microsoft.
And lots in store for you.
There we go.
First, we want to acknowledge that the land where the Microsoft campus is situated was traditionally occupied by the Sammamish, the Duwamish, the Snoqualmie, the Suquamish, the Muckleshoot, the Snohomish, the Tulalip, and other Coast Salish peoples since time immemorial. A people that are still here, continuing to honor and bring to light their ancient heritage. My name is Allison Wines. I'm a senior program manager in our developer tools division. I'm an Asian and white female with dark brown hair wearing a red sleeveless top.
And I'm Seth Juarez, program manager in the AI platform group. I'm a tall Hispanic male wearing a blue shirt, khaki pants. Today we kick off 2 days of learning more about the latest solutions, exploring how these key innovations can empower you to do great things, and connecting with peers from around the world.
Well, I play that, and thank you for getting that, Travis. I play that because, you know, we should take hope in that. These are the people who think that they're going to control us. What a laughingstock they are. Again, going through all this, these are names I've never heard. The Duwamish, the Snoqualmie, and the Muckleshoot. Do they have the Proud Feet, or is that Proud Foot tribe that are there? I mean, look, here's a lesson we take from that nonsense, one of them, many of them. That is, as she goes through this list of people you've never heard of, different groups, it's just a reminder that civilizations come and go. And this civilization is circling the drain, as evidenced by Microsoft. And these are the people who think they're smarter than everybody else, as Bloomberg has said. These are the people who are working to make sure that they monitor everything that you do, and that they take your job and they replace you with their designed artificial intelligence and the rest of the stuff. So we should take heart in this. Not only are these people evangelists, and they're evangelists for a dark satanic agenda, these are people who are in rebellion to God, and we should be grateful about the fact, not that we're so it's not that we're so great that God's going to stand up for us. It's just that these people are. You know, they're taunting him when they do this. Anyway, we look at the racism and the wokeness. It is everywhere. State Street, one of the biggest investment firms, says that they will now need to have special approval to hire white men. They need to get up the number of blacks, Asian, and other minority staff members, and they need to do it by 2023. And so the investment firm has said that in this company that has 39,400 people, that they said this is now front and center for State Street, It is on every senior executive's scorecard. Do not hire white men. There you go. When we look at what is happening to our money by these same types of people, after the DEA stole $70,000 from this filmmaker, he eventually got his money back plus a $15,000 settlement. This story about civil asset forfeiture had a happy ending. But it is not happy that we have civil asset forfeiture. And as I've said many times, if we have an out-of-control bureaucracy and an out-of-control government that doesn't even pretend to pay any attention to the Constitution, this is what we wind up with. And Joe Biden is very happy of his contributions in the area of civil asset forfeiture, as well as things like assault weapon bans and things like that. But these things that were put in during the Reagan administration, he has bragged incessantly, just like Donald Trump brags about how he created the warp speed vaccine. Joe Biden brags about how he created mandatory minimums, civil asset forfeiture, things like that. So this is a film producer who was flying into the country. He said his work takes him to some shady places. So he was traveling with cash that he uses to do the films because he's going around to a lot of people, and it's just, you know, it's easier for him to deal with cash. We don't have to make a justification for spending cash. That's another part of what this is about. This is about prohibition of cash. But he said he had put it in an Xbox that he had on his carry-on luggage. It was an old, broken Xbox. He said, I didn't want anyone to suspect that I had some type of cash on me, so I was hiding the money from the usual suspects, so to speak. Instead, what he didn't realize is that the usual suspects who will steal more from you than anybody else is the DEA and the people who are operating along these Biden administration rules. So he said when he was going through, he told the TSA, the checkout, he said, yeah, they asked him what's in the box, and he told them. and so then they called the TSA. They called the DEA. The TSA called the DEA. And this guy turns up. His name is Antonio Logrande. He said, Logrande turns to me. He says, you know what this looks like, right? He says, I was like, no, I don't know. What does it look like? At no point did he say you're a drug dealer. But the implication was clear enough. And Logrande was unsatisfied with Etienne's explanation of why he needed to carry so much money. He said, in hindsight, he said, I went through and I showed him that I've been doing films for 20 years. I showed him my website, showed him phone numbers and references. He said, but I could have had Steven Spielberg call him up and say, hey, I work with this kid. He said they were still going to take my money that day. Before the encounter at JFK, he said, I was never in any trouble of any sort in any way. But here I am being compliant and I'm trusting the person with the badge. And it was such a traumatic thing. After the shock wore off, he got some lawyers and he realized, hey, he's got to sue them for this stuff. But while that was happening, they decided, the Department of Justice, because they wanted to keep that $70,000, they started an investigation into him. They started going over his bank accounts with a fine-tooth comb, seeing if they could make a case for him structuring any deposits. But he didn't have that much money, so they couldn't have made a case for him to structure a deposit. He said, I was shocked that they were looking at my bank account as a U.S. citizen. I thought that that was private. But obviously I was wrong. They can willy-nilly take a look and they can see whatever they want to see. So this is the problem. Everybody seems to think that we project our values onto the federal government. And even worse, we project the values of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence onto our government. And we don't realize that they have nothing to do with decency, morality, legality at all. Bottom line, after he got it all back, he said, I'm not going to travel with that much cash again. Having seen firsthand how civil asset forfeiture gives cops a license to steal, he said, I'm not going to travel with that much cash. He said he decided to publicize his case in order to raise awareness of civil forfeiture abuses in the hope that it might encourage a change in policy and practices. So I hope that Megyn Kelly sees this, because she's absolutely clueless about civil asset forfeiture when I talk to her. I'm not going to go on that story again, but I was surprised. She'd never heard of it. So he's not going to travel with cash. Now, here's another case. This is a man in New Orleans that took his life savings. He says, I'm not going to have cash in my house anymore. So this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to intimidate you from traveling with cash. They're trying to intimidate you from having cash, using cash. The Institute of Justice was representing this guy. And again, it's the TSA. They took a New Orleans man's life savings, and he has won his particular case. But how much did that cost? The organization that defended him again is the Institute for Justice. They explained Kermit Warren, a New Orleans grandfather and a head deacon of his lower Ninth Ward church, lost his savings, the amount was not released, to DEA agents at the Columbus, Ohio airport through which he was traveling. He was returning home with his savings after inspecting a tow truck that he had considered to purchase for his business. And they grabbed him for having cash, because if you got cash, that shows that you are a criminal. You know, the same way that if you've, we were told back in 2009, after the 2008 election, if you got a bumper sticker on the back of your car that says Ron Paul or Chuck Baldwin, no, you're a sovereign citizen. Watch out for these guys. They'll try to shoot you. So shoot them first, type of thing. That was from the Mayak Fusion Center, putting that information out back in 2009. So yeah, just labeling people. Oh, you got cash? Well, you're obviously a drug dealer. I'm relieved that I will finally get my hard-earned savings back after a year of suffering, but what happened to me was wrong. The officers and the prosecutors treated me like a criminal when all I was trying to do was to improve my business and my life. For a year, they've left me struggling to survive a pandemic and a hurricane without my savings. I did nothing wrong, but until the law is changed so that everyone is protected, I'm not going to have cash in my house anymore, he said. Which, again, brings us back to, why do you think? These are cases that are not hidden from anybody, and they become more and more common, and there's been more and more talk about it, and we have some state jurisdictions and some local jurisdictions where they have pushed to limit the civil asset forfeiture. So it's not unknown, because you do have people who are working at some levels of our government who are addressing this kind of abuse. Why is it that nobody in the Republican Party, or the Democrat Party for that matter, is doing anything about this? And just keep that in mind if you think these people are going to do anything to defend any of your liberties. This civil asset forfeiture is one of the most egregious abuses of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and our due process that I've ever seen. This legal fiction that you can charge an inanimate object, whether it is a car or a house or an airplane or a stack of cash. When you look at these civil asset forfeitures, it's U.S. government versus $9,000 in cash or something to that effect. They're charging the inanimate object with being an accessory to a crime and doing it in many cases with absolutely no evidence to support that. It's nothing other than outright theft by our government. And the first thing they did was to steal the rule of law and due process from us. Peter Thiel talking about Bitcoin, you know, if we're talking about the dishonesty and the criminalization of cash, he says, well, Bitcoin is, quote, the most honest market that we have right now. Which is not necessarily to say that it is honest necessarily, but he says, you know, $60,000 Bitcoin, I'm not sure that one should aggressively buy into that, he said. But surely what it is telling us is that we are having a crisis moment. He said, Bitcoin is the canary in a coal mine. It's the most honest market we have in the country, and it's telling us that this old regime is about to explode. I've mentioned before Jim Rogers, who you've seen him on some investment things, and he wrote a book that I read back in, I guess it was late 80s, early 90s or something, Investment Biker. He went around the world with his girlfriend on a motorcycle so that he could, you know, because when you travel with a motorcycle, you travel with a convertible with a top down, you really get a sense of traveling. And so he, you know, everywhere that he could go by land, he took a motorcycle and went around the world. And he said as he went into these third world countries, he kind of came up with a rule of thumb that he could gauge the amount of corruption in a country based on the difference in the exchange rate, the official exchange rate, and the exchange rate on the street, in the black market, in the free market, if you will. And I guess today, I haven't seen Jen Rogers say anything about Bitcoin and the commentary that that makes on the corruption in our society and the corruption in our central banks. But Peter Thiel is talking about it. And he said he wished that he bought more Bitcoin. He now feels that inflation is here to stay, which the Biden administration doesn't even admit that it's here, let alone that it'll stay here. They don't even, they completely discount. Just like, you know, this is not a vaccine mandate that we've been talking about all morning. Not a vaccine mandate. There's no problem with a deficit. There's no problem with inflation. As you look at this, another article at Zero Hedge says 4% of Americans say they've quit their jobs thanks to their crypto gains. So, you know, Peter Thiel didn't invest in crypto, but he did invest in some other things. So he is allowed to stop his day job, so to speak, his day job of being a working billionaire. I can be a commentating billionaire, I guess. The 4% of Americans say that they quit their job over the last year due to, quote, financial freedom earned by investing in cryptocurrency. And another 7% say that they know somebody who has. So that just means that the impression is twice as great as the reality that people have been able to do this. They point out most of these people who are quitting their jobs are not Bitcoin millionaires. In fact, it's just the opposite. Most of those quitting their jobs are in the, quote, lowest income brackets. In other words, they'll be back to work someday. Whether demand for work returns gradually or all at once, that'll be a key question for markets and economies going forward. But one factor that is clear is that the money raised by many of these investors isn't exactly life-changing. While it may have been enough for some of them to retire permanently, most, however, are just using it as another form of asset diversification, not a source of income. At some point, if crypto prices fall, or if at the very least, if they don't keep rising in perpetuity, what we will have is a situation that the bottom line, and you know, I've talked about Bitcoin in the past, and I was a big supporter of it initially. Then I kind of pulled back as it started to become really, you know, taking off and value. It started to look very speculative to me. Then the other concern that I have with it is the fact that it seems to be preparing the way for a cashless society, which I think is an evil, a great evil, especially when you look at the difference between the central bank digital cash and cryptocurrencies. They're totally different. But to the public, they feel the same in the way that you might use them. And so I'm concerned about that aspect of it. I'm going to have Goat Tree on this week to talk about crypto and ways that people can be careful with it, because it's not just having your cash stolen by the DEA or the TSA at the airport. You know, there's other ways that you have to be careful with this. It's a whole new way that you can be ripped off or defrauded. But it's that way with anything. And it does provide a way for us to get away from the central control of these things. So I think as long as it is not outright banned, and of course they could do that in a heartbeat, just like that. They did it in China, for example. The largest miner of Bitcoins, the biggest operation, was just shut down without any notice whatsoever. Now, the American government could do the same thing because we're acting like China now. I mean, we have the same rules as they do in China, which is you do what I say. We don't have a rule of law. If we had a rule of law, there would be some buffer there. So the only thing that we can look at in terms of Bitcoin is what is happening in the markets. And so when they put in this Bitcoin ETF, they're not even trading the Bitcoin. I mean, this is just pure speculation. They're not buying it and holding it as an asset. This is just pure speculation on it. But the fact that that's there is a little bit telling that they're not quite ready to just pull the plug on the mining and things like that and on possession of it. And it isn't so much the possession of it, because they can't really find that. It's, to me, it's the mining thing. They know where the miners are, and they can, because of the massive amounts of power that they use, you can't hide that. And so they can literally pull the plug on that type of thing. But it's also the fact that you've got, as I pointed out last week, the mayor of Miami saying, I'm going to take a week's paycheck in Bitcoin. And then you've got the incoming mayor in New York City who said, I'm going to take the first three paychecks in Bitcoin. So when there's some stuff like that coming around, either these guys are completely disconnected to what is going on, or that tells you that it's going to be some more time before they pull the plug on it. And I would think that the guys in New York and Miami are not that out of touch with what is happening. So, but the bottom line is the real evil that we have to be aware of, and the thing that is positioning itself to try to, on the surface, look like cryptocurrency, but is absolutely not anything at all like cryptocurrency. There is no blockchain, for example, with the central bank digital cash. No blockchain. And there is no decentralization. As a matter of fact, it is full centralization. It will be a centralization of the world's currency. And it will be used to monitor and to control everything that you do. This article on Zero Hedge from Daily Reckoning puts it this way. They're not cryptocurrencies. They don't use blockchain. They definitely do not embrace decentralized issuance model that is hailed by the crypto crowd. These central bank digital currencies will be highly centralized, tightly controlled by central banks. They are not new currencies even. They are using the same currencies that you already know, whether it's dollars or euros or yen or sterling. They're using it in a new form, using new payment channels. And so that is the real concern. By the way, when you look at mining and how this is all taking off, there's, and I'd mentioned this before, showed a video of, and this has been going on since before the supply chain problems that we had because of the pandemic. There was actually a site that was monitoring these high-end video cards because they need them for the processing power to do Bitcoin mining. And it was a website that was constantly scanning availability of these various high-end video cards. And when one of them would become available, it would ping. So people would just leave this thing running on as a live stream on YouTube. And when something became available, it would ping. And if you were right there and you were really fast, you could get one of these video cards. I mean, that's how scarce they are. I mean, maybe a good investment would be the companies that make these things. You don't buy the, don't try to become a gold miner. You try to sell the picks to the people who do the mining. But there was a truckload of these high-end video cards that was stolen in California. So that has now become the big move. The big criminal move is to grab an entire truckload of these video cards, because then you can get into the very lucrative mining, cryptocurrency mining business. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars,
let's go,
and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing,
you'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, let's talk a little bit about climate change and emissions, because this is, we've had COP26, in Scotland. And this is really the other aspect. It ties in. You look at the COVID so-called pandemic, and if you look at 9/11 and you look at climate change, they're all tied together, all three of them. The one that joins both of them together is the pandemic, because the pandemic is tied in with the climate change agenda. They both have the same goals and actions that they want to accomplish, and the overturning of everything that we have in terms of the Great Reset and that type of thing, the confiscation of assets, the prohibition of meat and travel and homes and things like that, they're both tied together to that. And at the same time, it is also tied to 9/11, because as I pointed out before, you know, the pandemic was tied to the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act and the false flag of the anthrax attack. And that aspect of it provides the police state and the surveillance state. So it's tied to 9/11 in terms of the police state and the surveillance state. It is tied to climate change in terms of depriving us of freedom, of our possessions, and our human dignity. And I think it's a shame that Kim Jong-un did not show up at COP26 for whatever reason. He is warning North Koreans that COVID can be caught through falling snow. The perfect synthesis of all of these lies. You can be caught, you can catch COVID in the falling snow. So be careful throughout the winter, because there will be falling snow in the winter season. It is important to be aware as ever to make thorough antivirus measures, because, you know, it's cold and flu season and all of it will be mislabeled as COVID. That's what they're really waiting for. He has also, meanwhile, ordered North Koreans to worship Kim Jong-unism in an unprecedented power move. It's a new religion, frankly, and I guess that's one of the reasons why he was invited by the Pope. He's got a new religion, and the Pope is all about every religion except for Roman Catholicism. We have, as they were focused on emissions, we have this embarrassing emission that is being talked about by Camilla Parker Bowles, the consort of Prince Charles. She has not stopped talking, says the Daily Mail and many others, about hearing President Biden break wind while they were talking at COP26 summit. By the way, Travis, scroll down there and show the picture of Biden talking to, they're right there, that's it. Zoom in on that if you can, because he's got this expression on his face like he knows exactly what he's doing. She said it was long, it was loud, it was impossible to ignore. And she hasn't stopped talking about it. And as the Daily Mail points out, this is not the first time that Biden has faced claims that he broke wind. In May 2020, Republicans, including Donald Trump Jr., posted a video clip of him containing a suspicious noise while live streaming an exchange with the Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf. This is not his first rodeo. You know, I had mentioned this before while he was there. They were focusing on methane, not on his. But they had 105 countries, and this is the big news to come out of COP26, methane. 105 countries backed Biden's plan to cut methane emissions by 30%. And yet, while they were doing that, he already had a reputation for doing what Camilla said he did. He was evacuated from the summit in Glasgow last week, right after he put out his big gas pledge. He didn't pledge not to have big gas, but he pledged that you will not have big gas. He was reportedly seen at a meeting in a room with Leonardo DiCaprio and Jeff Bezos before a Secret Service detail rapidly escorted him out after an alarm was sounded. I wonder if that was an alarm that was pulled by Camilla. But again, when we look at this, why is it that if they're going to talk about regulations and taxes and stuff like that, why is it that we have Jeff Bezos there or Leonardo DiCaprio, right? Why is that happening? Well, we'll get to that in a moment. But he fell asleep at the conference, and then shortly after that was when he had that meeting with Camilla, where I guess, you know, he was starting to come to life. Federalist co-founder Sean Davis said, can you blame him for falling asleep? But then we have, while he is there talking about the need to eliminate methane gas from everywhere except his own person, we have Kamala Harris. This is not Camilla, but this is Kamala. Emphasis is on a different syllable. And she interrupts a presentation at NASA because she is, listen to this, she is the chair of the National Space Council. So she's actually been promoted from space cadet. And this is what she had to say to the NASA guy about black trees mattering.
Climate adaptation strategies.
Can you measure trees? Part of that data that you're referring to, and it's in EJ's environmental justice, but you can also track by race. There are averages in terms of the number of trees in the neighborhood where people live.
So you can actually trace by race the number of trees in a neighborhood. So she's being trolled by people who say, well, now we're going to black trees matter. She believes, she said, I believe truly that space activity is climate action. And so she interrupted that presentation from the NASA guy asking, can you measure trees? Part of that data that you're referring to is an issue of EJ, of environmental justice. Environmental justice. Can you track by race their average in terms of the number of trees in the neighborhood? People have commented, I can't get over the fact that an environmental justice and tree equity now are real phrases that are being used by Democrats. Another person said, so people no longer have biological genders, but trees have races. Yes, that is the world in which we live. GOP senator demands to know Biden's carbon footprint. Do you think he's going to do that? No, they've had GOP senators demanding that Fauci resign, demanding that Biden pull back his mandate, demanding that he give us his carbon footprint, but he's not going to do any of that. No, as a matter of fact, what he really wants to do is he wants to wreck the U.S. oil industry. That's a headline from National Review, and of course, this is what he's been working on since day one. Day one. This methane emission focus is what came out of COP26 is methane emissions. And we're not talking about Biden personally. We're talking about the narrative that's being pushed out there by the mainstream press. The new EPA methane emission regulations will strangle domestic oil production, says National Review. This part is not a laughing matter. Biden's EPA will soon issue regulations requiring that all associated natural gas released in conjunction with oil production be put into pipelines for delivery to market. Well, that sounds reasonable enough, doesn't it? We don't want to waste it. And if you believe that methane is somehow changing our climate, which, by the way, I do not. I've been part of a group that demanded 15 years ago, we'd like to see your data. Could we see your data? You know, you published this, you published a study, you've used it to craft public policy. You did it while you were an employee at the University of Virginia. Michael Mann, the guy behind the so-called hockey stick that featured so prominently in Al Gore's Convenient Lie movie. No, they hid it. So if you're doing science, you don't have to hide the data. And it's the same thing we've seen now. So, yeah, I don't believe that this is an issue. But even if you believed that it was an issue, here's the practical aspects of this and how this will shut down our production of oil. And that is the point. You see, I don't think that you're going to have a situation here in the U.S. You'll have some jurisdictions, like in California, where they will shut down and probably ban cars, just as they have in Europe. But for the most part, what they're going to do is they're going to make it extremely expensive to fuel a car, and very rare. And so only the people who have a lot of money will be able to do that. That's really going to be the plan. So how are they going to do this? Well, the impact of these new regulations cannot be overstated. All right, it's National Review. Oil producers already put associated natural gas into pipelines whenever they can. The problem is that they're not always available to put the gas that comes when they're drilling the oil, they also get natural gas. And so, of course, they would like to be able to sell both of those. But if you're drilling offshore, for example, you can't capture it and send it back. If you are doing in some new locations that we're dependent on in North Dakota, for example. There's no way to capture it there. And even in places where they've been doing it for a while, in Colorado or Texas, because of the terrain or because of obstacles with real estate, there's not a way to capture that. So the result will be that it will shut it down. And if you want to know how silly this is, it's not just Kamala Harris talking about, you know, sorting the trees by race, by the race of the neighborhood or whatever. It is this from climatedepot.com. A British Columbia doctor clinically diagnoses a patient as suffering from climate change. And he said, well, you know, I think that we need to make a case out of this so that people really understand the true impact that it has. And he said, I thought the people were going to make fun of me, but instead, roughly 40 doctors and nurses at the small hospital who are all busy in this pandemic. You know, we've seen how busy they are doing the TikTok videos. And they, well, this is one of the other things they got busy doing. They all decided that they would come together and they would create a group called Doctors and Nurses for Planetary Health. Because if you call it health, you can take anything and everything from people. I mean, we've even got doctors who for quite a while have been talking about banning guns in the name of public health. So they declared an ecological emergency. And what brought this all on was a lady who was in her 70s, came into the emergency room there, and she was dying of heat exhaustion, he said. He said she's got diabetes, she's got heart failure, and she's got no air conditioning, and she's living in a trailer. So what's the solution to this? Should we strangle the grid so that she doesn't have any air conditioning? Possible at all? Should we get her some air conditioning? And we've seen this type of thing happen in the wake of hurricanes in Florida, where they lose power for an extended period of time. You had a lot of people in nursing homes die because the homes are not set up to have the kind of ventilation that they used to build homes for back in the day before you had air conditioning. They would have high ceilings that have a lot of flow-through ventilation. Instead, you know, in the 70s, after air conditioning came in, they made them like, you know, really low ceilings, no windows. So it turns into a heat box. But the reality is that cheap, affordable electricity has a lot to do not just with lifestyle, but with life expectancy. And as Mark Morano points out, you have in the UK and in especially in Germany, you've had a lot of people who have died from lack of heat because they're on pensions and they can't afford to pay the higher fuel rates. And so they're shutting it off and they're getting sick and they're dying. That's the reality. And yet the bankers who are behind all this, the bankers who are behind the central bank digital cash, are now, as part of this COP26 and as the new net zero, Janet Yellen, former Federal Reserve, current Treasury Department head, is talking about how the price tag for this is going to be trillion. Yeah, that's right, trillion. $150 trillion. Think about this. This profligate infrastructure bill, $1.2 trillion, what they've done is they've just floated the decimal place 2 points to the right. This is 100 times that. Where are they going to get this money? They're going to get it from you and I. This is part of making us poor. They're going to put us into debt for this. They're going to create massive inflation for this. And they're very serious about this. So Janet Yellen, as well as the Bank of America, talking about how we could do this, said, well, you know, it might look like we're going to have debt and hyperinflation, but I think we can handle this. I think we can do bonds. I think we can put people in bondage, into debt. I think we can do this. And if central banks, says Bank of America, if central banks only have to foot 20% of the bill or less, then this would be manageable. Let me ask you, who's going to be paying the other 80%? You and I. They're going to take everything that we have. We may not have nearly as much as these people, but there's so many of us that they can take the little bit that we have and make themselves very, very wealthy. And that's why we need to understand that in the same way, when they want to take power and rights from us, we may not have too much, but there are so many of us that we could push back on this if we only had the will to do that. So they're going to starve us for meat. They're going to starve us for everything. This is part of the plan, and it is a part a key part of this, as they talk about this always. Klaus Schwab loves to talk about this fourth industrial revolution. He doesn't like to talk about the fourth turning too much because right now, it's happening right now. This is another industrial revolution turning. Bloomberg has talked about it, but the timing is perfect for this as well because of a generational turning. But as they look at this, what they call the fourth industrial revolution, what he also calls the Great Reset, they see this as a merging of the physical, the digital, and the biological world. It says it's going to change how we understand ourselves, and it's going to change what it means to be human. I want you to think about that. You see, when we look at all this transgender insanity, and we look at how this is being pushed so hard to our children, what is fundamentally behind that is the method for this madness. If they can get you detached from biological reality, if they can groom and gaslight our children into this, when you look at what is being sold to them in terms of gender fluidity, in terms of the metaverse, and the rest of these things, this is key to redefining reality, everything about reality, including our own humanity. That's what this transhumanism is about. And that's why these people who are focused on this are really focused on transhumanism. They're focused on these technologies. I think the easiest way to remember it is GRAIN, the acronym GRAIN. Genetics, first. Robotics, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology. All of those things are a factor in all of this. And they are coming for our children. In New York City, they're offering the children $100 to get the vaccine now. Of course, they're offering the parents that. Yeah. Will you sacrifice your child to this cult of sorcery, the pharmakia cult? Will you sacrifice your child? How about for $100? Will you do it for $100? It's really disgusting. One commentator, Steve Kirsch, believes, and I would have to look at this and say, I don't know if this is really the case or not, but his theory is that once the Pfizer vaccine is approved in kids, that they will then use this to get their liability waiver because of the National Childhood Vaccination Program. That is a possibility. I don't think that is the key thing, because there is a different approach to this that is based on its emergency status, based on the idea that it is supposedly coming from a pandemic. Sesame Street, meanwhile, this is not a parody. This is sick. This is how sick our society is. Sesame Street is using their characters to push the vaccines to the 5 to 11 age group. You know, when I talked about what the New England Journal of Medicine and Yale, and particularly Yale, in a study, they did a double-blind study, scientific study, about how they could use, how they could market this to people, how they could pressure them, you know, make them feel guilty. They had to do it for the community. They had to obey authority, all these different things. And how would you feel if somebody caught COVID because you didn't get a vaccine and, you know, you killed them? Think about how guilty you would. So they used all these things, guilt, arguments from authority, influencers, celebrity influencers. They war gamed this thing out, and they war gamed that out well before they started any testing, well before they started having any of this stuff even being manufactured. You know, they did that. You had the money had been released for Operation Warp Speed by Trump, but they had not even started the manufacturing, let alone the testing of this stuff. And they were already working on how they were going to psychologically gaslight people. It's pretty easy to do it to kids, isn't it? That's why we have the rules to say that kids cannot consent to sex under a certain age. They can't drive cars. They can't own guns or have alcohol or tobacco because they're such easy marks. And yet what they're doing is exactly that on Sesame Street. Listen to this. I got the COVID vaccine today. My wing is feeling a little sore, says Big Bird in a tweet. A tweet, yeah. But I'll give my body an extra protective boost that keeps me and others healthy. And then you had CNN's Sanjay Gupta, who goes on a dialogue with Elmo about vaccines on November 6th town hall this weekend, Saturday. He said, so right now the vaccine is only for kids 5 and older, Gupta said to Elmo. So 3.5-year-old monsters, kids like you, are probably going to have to wait a little bit longer until next year, but scientists are working hard right now to make sure you can get the vaccine as soon as possible. Isn't that interesting that Sanjay Gupta, a puppet of big pharmaceutical companies, would be talking to another puppet to sell this to kids? Babylon Bee, in a satire, says Play School has now unveiled Vaccinate Me Elmo. That'll tickle me. When you jab the new doll with an included plastic syringe, he starts having heart palpitations and he cries from the pain. For a more realistic experience, he can vibrate and shake from the side effects, and kids will love watching him writhe on the ground, complaining of arm and chest pain. They'll have so much fun poking Elmo in the arm and watching as he cries from the arm pain, said the CEO of Hasbro. The doll says fun phrases like, Elmo loves complying with government mandates. Ha, ha, ha. Another one. Ivermectin is not approved by the FDA. Oh, I should have had him say, Ivermectin is horse medicine. Could have done it in the voice of Terry Bradshaw or pick any CNN correspondent or FDA head. I mean, it's ridiculous for the FDA to take the lead in something like that. Anyway, some of the other phrases included in the Vaccinate Me Elmo doll. Mask up or you'll die. Elmo loves experimental vaccines. Do you want to kill grandma? Comply or die. F the anti-maskers. We're all in this together or else. Ha, ha, ha. By the way, it's very interesting, I think, that Gavin Newsom has not been seen for quite some time. And a lot of people are starting to notice that he's disappeared for about 11 days. Maybe it's 12 days today. Last he was seen, he was getting a vaccine. And he hasn't been seen since. I find that to be very interesting. Perhaps he will be taking one for the team. And I laugh about that. I don't typically like to. I don't like to mock people who mocked those of us who refuse to take a product that is experimental, untested, genetic modification that was rushed out without any testing and for which they have no liability. I know they love to mock us, and I'll see articles from time to time where somebody will find someone who is mocking everybody and they go get their second or third dose and they drop dead. I don't like to mock people for having that happen to them. But in the case of Gavin Newsom, I would have to take exception to that. There will certainly be some schadenfreude if this guy who has imposed this on everybody, if he gets hoisted by his own petard, so to speak, blown up by his own bomb, poisoned by his own toxin. Wouldn't that be amazing if that were actually to happen? He's not been seen since he got his COVID booster shot on October the 27th. On October the 29th, he abruptly canceled plans to attend COP26 in Scotland. I mean, that's the sort of thing where you want to be. I mean, that's everybody. It's the ruling elites. They're all there. And when we're talking about the Great Reset Society that has been envisioned by Schwab, you know, Klaus Schwab, the Bond villain, by the way, we're really talking about corporate governance and that kind of fascism. As this article from Mises.org points out, the World Economic Forum, that's the Davos people, their model represents the governmentalization of private industry. Under Schwab's stakeholder capitalism, and it's not just him. I mean, he may have invented that phrase, but everybody is using it now. It's the stakeholders who got to go up and talk to the Office of Management and Budget about how they would like to be able to charge you for the tests that they're going to mandate to keep your job if you don't get the vaccine. So they worked out a deal with them and said, you know, let us charge them. Okay, all right, now we're on board with it. They were the ones who had a stake in all this. We don't have a stake in the future, according to them. If they're in charge, we have no future. If the people in government now, in both parties, if the permanently entrenched bureaucracy remain in power, we have no future. It'll be the capitalists who have the stake in the future, and they'll be driving the stake through our heart. Unless we take that out and literally, or not literally, but if we figuratively drive that through their heart, through the heart of this system, we will not have a future. Governance is not only increasingly privatized, but corporations are deputized as major additions to government and to intergovernmental bodies. And so they talk about in terms of the vaccine regime, the state grants big pharmaceutical companies monopoly protection and indemnity from liability, and then the other corporations enforce it. And so with all of that in mind, why would Governor Newsom skip a meeting where he can go and meet the new masters of the future, people like Jeff Bezos and the PR flacks that are going to sell it, people like Leonardo DiCaprio? That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.